be alive after the revolution. From Groton to Tacoma, on many a factory floor, the workers talked of solidarity and refused to build weapons of war. No more will we make missiles. We're gonna do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy smiled and cried.
This is the Quality News Network. The fighting between Israeli troops and Hezbollah guerrillas in Lebanon entered its seventh day today. One woman was killed when a Hezbollah rocket struck northern Israel, and at least 16 people in Lebanon were killed in Israeli strikes. 235 Lebanese and 13 Israelis have so far been killed in the last week. An Israeli general estimates that the offensive could last weeks, not months. And the Jerusalem Post quotes an Israeli military source as saying that 40 to 50% of Hezbollah's military capacity has been destroyed. Evacuation efforts are also continuing. A Greek ship is headed to the Lebanese coast to ferry as many as 8,000 Americans from Lebanon to Cyprus. Meanwhile, five U.S. warships are headed to the region to provide security during the evacuations. Approximately 350 Americans have been evacuated so far. Fox News reports that U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice will arrive in the Middle East on Friday after meeting with U.N. Secretary General Kofi Annan in New York. However, State Department officials say her travel plans have not been decided yet. On Capitol Hill, the Senate passed a bill that would expand its stem cell research, but President Bush says he will veto the bill on moral grounds. It was already passed by the House last year, but lawmakers reportedly say the bill lacks a two-thirds majority to override a veto. Also on Capitol Hill, the House defeated a proposed constitutional amendment that would ban gay marriage. It fell short of the two-thirds majority necessary to amend the U.S. Constitution. Weather forecasters say the second hurricane of the season, Tropical Storm Beryl, has formed off the coast of the Carolinas. In Iraq today, a suicide bomber lured day laborers into his minibus near a Shiite shrine. He then detonated himself, killing at least 53 and wounding 105. It was one of the deadliest attacks since Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's National Unity Government took office in April. In Washington, White House officials say President Bush will address an NAACP at its annual convention on Thursday. It will be his first speech to the civil rights organization since taking office. White House spokesman Tony Snow said Mr. Bush sees it as, quote, a moment of opportunity, end quote, to highlight his commitment to civil rights. In Indonesia, rescuers now say that more than 339 people were killed in yesterday's tsunami. More than 600 were injured and 136 are still missing.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Veterans whose personal information was stolen will no longer receive free credit monitoring services. A White House official says that's because the laptop computer that contained the information has been recovered. The FBI says the information was not accessed. Medical device maker Medtronic will pay $40 million to settle a lawsuit. It accuses the company of paying doctors to use its products. Novartis plans to invest $600 million in the construction of a new flu vaccine manufacturing plant in North Carolina. Construction will begin next year. The New York Times says it will reduce the size of the pages in the newspaper and close the New Jersey printing plant. Those moves are expected to save the company $42 million a year. Microsoft has entered a 4-year partnership with Nortel Networks. They say customers will soon be able to use new phones to handle voice functions, instant messaging, and email. The Chinese economy grew 11.3% between April and June, but some government officials fear that an investment surge will hurt the country. Light sweet crude settled at $73.54 today, and at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 52 points at 10,799. The Nasdaq was up 6 points at 2043. The S&P 500 was up 2 points at 1237. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Heat like this, you do the best you can. Sometimes screams just sort of sound like that. Great googly moogly. It's like breathing through a sponge here. But I am ever so glad to be with you. I hope your day is going well. Ours is going fabulously, of course, here in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia at our secure, undisclosed location. I'm Bob Kincaid. At the controls to the heart of the sun is my darling wife, Agnes. She'll be taking your calls tonight, as ever, and seated immediately to her right, intern producer Zach.
Yay.
Hey, Zach. Also learning the operation of the controls to the heart of the sun. Where did I get that? There's some song out there. Set the controls for the heart of the sun. Okay, somebody help. We gotta play that now. But we're growing here. We're expanding. Things are getting better every day here. Of course, I've told you we haven't established a date yet, but in the very near future, we will be joined by yet another brilliant individual on this America's other liberal network. That individual is, of course, Dr. Bill O'Brien, who will bring a conversational style and a level of information and education that you've never experienced. It's going to be wonderful. Of course, Dr. Bill is an educator, college professor, history professor. We're all looking very much forward to his arrival on the network. Now, yesterday, of course, we started with President Potty Mouth. And frankly, I'm not, you know, there was no shock in finding out that he lacks a real vocabulary and can't. No, the real sickening part, as our friend Sue from Big Coal River noted, was the fact that we all learned yesterday what a failure as a mama that hateful old beast Barbara Beautiful Mind Bush is. And it only gets worse. Because lo and behold, okay, I'm probably a day or so behind the curve on this, but have you seen the Germany pictures? I'm not talking about the whole business. I thought she's gonna ask me about the hog. I might even get to cut the pig. I'm not talking about all that stuff. This man is a national embarrassment. George W. Bush is a national embarrassment. Have you seen the photos of Bush groping German Chancellor Angela Merkel? Have you seen these things? Okay, this is going to be a little complicated. Build, B-I-L-D, dot T, hyphen, online, dot D-E. And the German word for search is finden, finden, F-I-N-D-E-N. Type in Bush und UND, Bush und Merkel photo, F-O-T-O. You'll get there. I got a feeling you'll get there. Headline, Bush, Liebesattack auf Merkel. U.S. President fliegt auf unsere Kanzlerin. Shall I translate? Bush, love attack on Merkel. U.S. President fliegt. Oh, boy, that's 6 million. Yeah. There are two words in the German language, Zugenschlag. And they can mean just about anything. I think Mark Twain said it can mean anything from Schlagmutter, mother-in-law, to Schlagwasser, which means bilge water. Bush, love attack on Merkel. You got to see these pictures. He gropes her. Picture one, she's sitting there talking to somebody else at the G8 summit. And he comes walking up behind her. This is so cheesy, drunk college dude in the late night bar with the sticky beer stained, stinking floors. You know, the bar of last resort. And I know some of you have been there. But not me, Agnes. So he comes up and VOR for auf Deutsch next, okay? But you can figure it out from the iconography. So he's walking by her and he comes up behind her and you can see her. It looks like he's lunging at her with both hands for his neck or for her neck. And she's up over the shoulder, looking over her right shoulder. And he comes up and starts rubbing her neck. Hey, baby, what are you doing? You want to come up to my room here in the fraternity house? I got some etchings I'd like to show you. So, and there's our next photograph. Agnes, dear, what is that look on Angela Merkel's face? This is the female perspective, thank you.
Either leave me alone or I'm going to castrate you right now. That's the one.
With my nail clippers.
No, just grab them and rip them off.
Okay. Go look at it. Because that look on her face is... See, Zach? The only women that have ever looked at me like that have gone on to slap me. Not you, dear. Okay, I'm kidding. I've never been slapped. But this one, this is terrible radio. This is terrible radio. I'm sitting here describing photographs on the radio. I should know. Go look at these things. But the one where she's got both arms, get your hands off me, you filthy ape. Oh! This man is a national embarrassment. You know, there's a constitutional provision. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about impeaching him and removing him and the need to remove George Bush from office by whatever legal means available, necessary. Legal and peaceful. That's me, Agent Fred. Legal and peaceful. Want him gone. Legal and peaceful. And most of our discussions have centered on impeachment, or in his case, chimpeachment. But the fact is, there is another means. There is indeed another means of removing the president, and that is upon his disability. If you go and you look at the groping monkey, liebe mein Kanzlerin, if you go and look at the groping monkey, This guy's operating under a disability. And I don't mean disability like the normal way that we think. No, this guy is burned out, fried, cooked, toasted, sitting there drunk out of his mind in St. Petersburg, Russia, chomping a hunk of bread with his mouth wide open. Hey, Blair, come here. I took that Koizumi to, Graceland. You want to go to Graceland? We can get a peanut butter and banana banana sandwich. I like a peanut butter and banana sandwich. You like peanut butter and banana sandwich, Blair? This man is operating under a disability. This man must be... And I wonder sometimes if maybe big-time Dick Cheney doesn't think about doing it. But he needs George there. He needs George there. And this is, you know, this is just our lead-in. Because sometimes we are prone to get suckered. You, me, us liberals, us progressives, us decent people. Because yesterday, while the Israelis were trying to get a good run-up going on World War III, and Newt Gingrich was out there telling us that's what the goal was, I and many other people were caught up in the fact that dear leader was caught showing the fact that he has no manners in St. Petersburg, Russia, Petrograd. Did we get suckered? Did we? And here it is. It's happened again. These photos of him, the Chancellor of Germany. I mean, dear God, at least Bill Clinton confined his to a White House intern. Lord God, but then again, I guess when you're married to Pickles Bush, maybe the Chancellor of Germany does start to look hot. It's hard to say. Agnes, let's crank up a break, please.
Yes, Michael.
Jawohl. Liebchen. We'll be back. Your phone calls, of course, are always welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. This is America's other liberal network. This is the Head On Radio Network. And me, I'm Bob Kincaid.
Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
This is Lee Hamilton
and Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history,
and we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens,
staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history,
and it's also our future.
Get involved.
We often hear claims Muslims don't condemn terrorism.
And that Islam condones violence.
As Muslims, we want to state clearly
that those who commit acts of terror in the name of Islam are betraying the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad.
We reject anyone of any faith who commits such brutal acts.
And will not allow our faith to be hijacked by criminals.
Islam is not about hatred and violence. It's about peace and justice.
I love me some disco. Got my Kiana shirt out. 21 minutes past the hour, and I want to go straight to the phones because we are kindly joined by Mr. Greg Palast. Greg is the author, of course, of the New York Times best-selling The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and has recently released Armed Madhouse, which I've been reading. An amazing read, Greg. Are you there?
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling. You've got a real knack for cataloging madness.
Well, maybe we can unboggle you.
perhaps we can. This is, of course. I mean, I read The Best Money Democracy Can Buy. Bush Family Values, the DVD you released was amazing. In fact, it's the only place I've ever seen the actual clip of Ari Fleischer announcing Operation Iraqi Liberation.
Yeah, boy, the White House figured out a way to burn that one down.
Oh, that went down.
It's in the book, too.
Yeah.
Ari Fleischer, for those who don't know what you're talking about from the air, Ari Fleischer was White House spokesman. And when they first announced the plan for invading Iraq, they called it Operation Iraqi Liberation, OIL, the oil. And they must have thought that was just droll. That must have been a real knee slapper for Dick Cheney. But the Rubes won't get that one.
Going to fly right over their heads.
Well, the Rubes still didn't get that one, I suppose. Even they changed it to OIF, however. Operation Iraqi Freedom, OIF, OIF.
Yeah, OIF. Right.
Well, here we are, OIF.
That's like my favorite little acronym, ARF, another Republican failure. But you're trying to raise awareness of the book, obviously.
Yeah.
I must say this is journalism. I mean, there's some wonderful humor in there, and you've got a great wit, Greg, and it's a lot of fun to read. But this is the kind of solid. This is Murrow journalism.
Well, thank you. Yeah, actually, that's kind of what I was basing it, which is that I do, for those who don't know Greg Palast, I'm a reporter with BBC Television across the water, and I do investigate old-fashioned style investigative reporting for BBC, mainly because, as far as I can tell, it's illegal in the U.S. under Patriot Act 3 to do investigative reporting, you know? I got to do it there. But, yeah, it's old-style gumshoe investigative reporting, and so it doesn't get, because a lot of it's pretty heavy stuff and dramatic stuff, but just so that it doesn't become impossible to get down. I try to put in some of my worst jokes. So my best reporting, some of my worst jokes.
Well, I'd say it's a success all the way around. One of the things that I find most impressive about the book, Greg, is your ability to take some pretty mind-bending concepts like peak oil.
Yeah.
And make them accessible and make them real, and make the long term effect of it comprehensible. Because most people, I think, hear peak oil and they think, oh, it's all running out.
Yeah, it's much more complicated, and yet it's much more interesting, especially because in the case of peak oil, what I was talking about is why we're in Iraq or what keeps us there, which is. I was with a lot of people thinking, well, we went into Iraq to get the oil, you know, oil for blood. But, you know, and by the way, the progressives have got to stop saying no blood for oil because a lot of Americans think that's a real bargain, you know.
As
long as it's not their blood, I suppose. But,
well, you know, I mean, if it's Jorge Perez's blood.
Exactly.
For Muffy and Danny Smith, sure.
Yeah, why not? But the context is that to go into Iraq, as it turns out, I was able to actually get the secret plans for the oil fields of Iraq. It took 2 years of work to do that, a lot of undercover secret tape recordings, et cetera. But the most interesting part was what came out of it. It's not that the oil companies wanted us to go into Iraq to get the oil. They wanted to make sure we didn't get the oil. They were panicked that we would end up with a whole big pile of oil and bust the oil market. The higher the supply, the lower the price.
Well, right.
The last thing that they want. In fact, right now we've got what, $80 a barrel oil, $70 to $80 a barrel. When Bill Clinton left, it was $20 a barrel.
Times are good.
$80. That's mission accomplished.
Yeah, that's extra Lark's Vomit canapes for the CEOs at Shell and Mobil and Exxon and.
Yeah, no kidding. In fact, there's the chapter $1 trillion babies. I calculated that Exxon's oil reserves, because of the war, have grown in value by two-thirds of $1 trillion. That's not too shabby.
Good work if you can get it.
Yeah, right. People were complaining that their CEO got a $400 million bonus. That was nothing. I thought he was robbed. You give a bigger tip than that to a waitress, man. You know, that's not.
50%. I want to wait tables in that restaurant, Greg.
You know, I mean, yeah, exactly. Well, you know, that's exactly, you know, exactly right. When the pig's that big, you know, you need a lot of fodder, right?
Well, exactly. And, you know, I think what you're saying is, it's right, it wasn't about the oil. It wasn't about getting the oil. It was about getting the spigot.
Yes, it was going in. Exxon didn't send in its exploration company, the 82nd Airborne, into Iraq to find oil to bring it back so it would be nice and cheap for your Hummer. They went in to find the oil to turn off the spigot, exactly, so that the oil would stay, the oil market would stay tight. Saddam was under a 2 million barrel a day restriction, the oil for food program. Very little oil, very little food. That's the deal, buddy. And he was out of control. They kept calling, they kept saying he was out of control, out of control. That's the word I kept hearing. And so the Council on Foreign Relations, the conspiracy freak will really love this one, because the Council on Foreign Relations and the oil companies, James Baker Institute and the people around him, he represents Exxon and the Saudi government as a lawyer.
Right.
And Ken Lay was in these meetings, too, because you have to have just a little bit of sulfur in there, right?
Brimstone.
And, you know, what's the point of discussing money and war without having Ken around, right? It's so fun. So they all got together and discussed what they call the military option for Iraq, and this was in December 2000, right after the Supremes chose George as our president, and
right.
They decided that someone better tell George what his policy was going to be. And that's the group that presented the oil map of Iraq to Dick Cheney in his bunker in March of 2001. This is before September 11th or any of that.
Right,
stuff.
This is the same map.
The plan was out there. In fact, one thing that's interesting is there was a plan, a meeting in Walnut Creek, California, 2 or 3 weeks after the inauguration. They hadn't even, hung up the tuxedos yet. And they were already planning the military invasion in Walnut Creek under the State Department. And the big battle was not whether we should go in, but what plan we should use, the State Department's plan or the Pentagon's plan. And that was the internal fight in the White House was not whether to invade, but how they were going to do it. And that was a big fight, which still in a way continues on.
Yeah, and that's a real choice between Scylla and Charybdis, too.
Yeah, that's a pretty heavy-duty.
Sorry, I'm a redneck, but I do that every now and then, Greg.
I won't tell anyone.
Okay. One of the things that you accomplish very well in the book, though, is you know, this is the oil focus, but there is it's a spider web. It's not linear. This is tied to electronic voting.
Yeah.
It's tied to controlling Central America. It's tied to the villainization of Hugo Chavez.
And privatizing your Social Security. It's all put together.
Yeah.
And the idea that these guys don't know what they're doing. I was with Paul Krugman, who I love the guy, the New York Times writer and economist.
Yeah.
We just kept talking about how they messed up. I said, oil's $80 a barrel, mission accomplished. The auto industry has been destroyed by our need to fund the deficit, so it's raising interest rates. You have to see, as explained in the book in the chapter network, you have in our madhouse. You have to, when we spend $1 trillion to buy imported oil over the last 4 years, we borrow back the entire trillion, or it's lent back to us in the form of purchases of U.S. Treasury bills and bonds. That's how little George funds his deficit, which has gone up by $2 trillion. He was given a surplus by Clinton, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in order to borrow all that money, interest rates have got to rise. That's destroyed General Motors. It's destroyed with the high oil prices, destroyed the airline industry. What are the last two Democratic Party-controlled, unionized industries in America? Auto and airline.
Yes.
So they're destroyed. Mission accomplished. I mean, if you think there's tears in Washington, 2 weeks ago, 47,000 auto workers were forced into early retirement, right?
Yeah, Delphi.
We lost 47,000 auto workers. And by the way, Ford is opening up plants for 150,000 workers in Mexico. We've just lost 47,000 workers here. And if you don't think that Dick Cheney didn't break out that champagne, give his little ticker another boost, you know. They think they didn't fire that sucker up again.
Oh, yeah. No, well, if Dick could have found Walter Reuther's grave, he would have gone and taken a pee on it.
Well, it kind of did, you know. So it's mission accomplished. So you're right. It connects the class war, voter theft, and you know, once again.
And the culture, you know, the so-called culture war or whatever, however people prefer to, you know, with the stem cell thingy.
Yeah. Keep you confused, man.
Gay,
you know,
marriage.
Boys, you know, as soon as you say, hey, wait a minute, they're trying to take, well, one of the things that they did, and I point out, I have a section called The Grinch That Stole Labor Day about, The Grinch That Stole Overtime, about how on Labor Day a couple of years ago, they knocked 2 million people off the right to get time and a half pay on overtime under the law. And that, you don't notice that because as soon as you ask about that, they say, oh, stem cells, they're killing little babies.
Right, and so
little
labor.
Little baby polywog.
Yeah, and
killing,
labor's.
Let's see, what else? And
well, labor's out there trying to fight for the Kentucky River stuff where they're going to take nurses and say that because you're an RN and you tell the LPN to go empty the bedpan that you're a supervisor, so you don't get to be in a union anymore.
Yeah, you got. Well, obviously you have a problem with that. But and if you bring it up, they say, oh, wait, boys are kissing boys.
Right.
Exactly. So it's what they're doing is that, unfortunately, they did get 59 million pinheads to march to the poll and say, Georgie, save us. And, you know, and this is the other thing, is that the first chapter, of course, is Who's Afraid of Osama Wolf? It's about keeping you afraid with the war on terror. And, you know, it is a scary world, but, you know, they're not going to save us by having a color. By the way, do you know what today's color code terror is? Do you know what our terror color is today?
Puce?
I don't know. I can tell you this, though. You didn't check the terror color today, but Osama did.
Sure. Yeah, well,
we're the only nation on the planet. Because people have to understand, when they have red alerts, right, then they have the orange days and the green days or whatever. They have a specific list of things that they don't do on those other days. So in other words, we literally send out a notice to Al-Qaeda. Here's the days when we're not monitoring cargoes, for example. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, well, it is believable if you believe that, of course, it's not about terror. It's not a war on terror. It's a war on democracy, and that's what's going on. So, yeah, so, I mean, I appreciate, you know, the kind of words about our mass, and but you are, I think, one of the first hosts that I've spoken to many, who figured out that what I'm trying to do is draw connections. They think I've written a bunch of separate stories about the secret war for oil in Iraq.
Well, that's exactly, Greg, that's how I noticed it.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can bounce around through the book,
yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of like we used to do in the Southern Baptist Church when you got bored in the back and you'd sit
right.
there with the book and you'd...
I call it Lou reading. You just, you know, put
right.
it in the head and just pick up anywhere you want.
But the thing is, no matter where you pick this book up, it will automatically create a connection to wherever you were the last time.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you can it's
I'm sorry you're saying this because you know now you'll be joining me at the head on radio wing at Guantanamo next year.
I get well, you know, lucky for me, I look good in orange. But in all truth, well, let me ask you one other thing because obviously you went to press. Although I got the feeling you could sense it. You went to press before all the stuff hit the fan in the Levant, like it has in the last couple of weeks. Does this work into the scenario? There's no oil in Lebanon. There's no oil in Israel.
Yeah. See, the problem is, I was talking to the Palestinian ambassador a few weeks ago. I said, why are you guys fighting over the only place in the Mid East without any oil? And the problem is that the big players have no problem when there's turmoil which keeps the price of oil high. Look at Mad Mahmoud, the president of Iran.
Yeah, Ahmadinejad.
Every time the price of oil drops below $60. Or gets close to it, he starts screaming, I'm going to wipe out Israel, I'm going to build nukes. Every time, or the George's turn, every time the price gets towards 60, he starts rattling his statement. Now the price is dropping again, and once again, now we have a big blow-up. Hezbollah's controlled by Iran. Israel can't do anything without Bush's approval. Hamas, the only money that they have comes out of Saudi Arabia. In other words, the big oil players, Bush, the Riyadh, Tehran, they can call back the berserkers tomorrow morning, but no one has an interest in calling back the berserkers. Oil up to $80 a barrel. Mission accomplished. Yeah, I'm not going to say if they sat around and say, "Well, let's have another blow up so the price of oil can stay up." But they sure take just like when the levees broke in New Orleans, and you'll see the story about that I wrote in there. It's not a goof up. When the levees broke, Bush literally got on a plane and went to a golf resort in Arizona.
And had birthday cake.
If that was a goof-up, it was another mission accomplished. While they watched an electoral problem, the Louisiana turning into a blue state, and that problem just got washed away.
And it's not coming back.
They got around to, you know, blowing up the life raft after a couple days at the golf resort.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you've got the Ninth Ward electorate living in the middle of Salt Lake City, I'd say you've pretty well diluted that little problem.
I mean, I'm laughing about it. I worked in New Orleans. I had friends who literally whose homes are just gone, and you have to say, look, you know, the guy literally went to play guitar at a golf resort in Arizona, but moreover, they had one of the investigations in our madhouse is. Where, you know, everyone keeps saying they had a failed evacuation plan in New Orleans. No, they didn't. I asked for I said, where's the evacuation plan? It turns out that they had privatized evacuation planning. This wasn't the government screw up. They turned it over to private enterprise. Turns out to some cronies, basically a group called Innovative Emergency Management, and whose only innovation in emergency management seems to be giving a lot of money to the Republican Party. It had no experience in hurricane evacuation.
Some catch that
and
catch
when
22,
I asked
yeah.
them for the plan, I said, so you were paid for this plan. Can I have a copy of it? They said, well, we can't tell you where the plan is. I said, is it wet? Where's the plan? So
yeah.
Then I called FEMA. I called our protectors, Mr. Bush's emergency management agency.
Heck of a
and I
job.
Said, so can I have a copy of the New Orleans plan? I want to see whether it went right or wrong. We can't locate it. they couldn't locate the
dog ate it.
Okay. And I actually had filed Freedom of Information requests to get the plane, and they still deny it. Now they're denying that they say they literally, the government says they cannot locate the emergency evacuation plan for New Orleans.
Well, you know, you said, and I know your tongue was, yeah, your tongue was in your cheek, Greg, when you said it. But the fact of the matter is, you remarked earlier that you think that investigative journalism might actually be illegal in this country.
Well, you know, you're not allowed to report. I mean, Anderson Cooper was allowed. You know, he's from the Vanderbilt family. He was allowed to go and cry when he saw, you know, his waiters and the guys who cut his lawn living terribly in the stadium. That's, you know, I understand that. That's allowed. But investigating what happened and who makes the money. See, Edward R. Murrow, and you got this correct, and Jack Anderson was another guy that I
yeah.
For those old enough to remember. It's follow the money. Who's making money off this? Who's making money off Ground Zero? Who's turned it into a profit center? And that's the type of thing that you want to look at. And, of course, you know, so and, you know, when I did, for example, a lot of, those people who know Greg Palast, they know me at all because I'm not allowed on your TVs, may know from Michael Moore's film, because I do the investigations on which they're based, the story of how thousands of black voters were wiped off the voter rolls of Florida before the 2000 election.
Right.
Now, you have to understand, that was on the top of the BBC Nightly News and on the front page of every paper in the world.
Well, the whole world knew we got ripped off.
And, you know, and when I did that story, so it wasn't, you couldn't get it here. And then in 2004, I wrote a story, which is the fourth chapter of the Bush book called Carry On, fourth chapter of Our Man Out.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's called Carry On, Now Get Over It, because they're stealing.
You're right.
2008. And when I reported the story, Carry On, again, I put that on BBC, and but then I had explained to people, well, Carry On, but he won't be inaugurated. Because, see, the issue is, as RFK has pointed out recently, Rolling Stone. The issue is that we have 3 million ballots in the United States which are cast and not counted, and there were enough of them in Ohio to make George the president. That was the difference between the exit polls and the so-called official polls, was the missing ballots. No kidding. And I reported this. When the New York Times said, well, we want to investigate the 2004 election, they called me up and said, you wrote Kerry Wong, we want to investigate this. I said, okay, well, we have a couple questions. I said, shoot. They said, question one, are you a sore loser? And question two, Mr. Palast, are you a conspiracy nut?
You know, I hate
him, Greg.
The
only two questions they had the next day, that was it for the New York Times investigation.
Sore loser, man.
Sore loser. No, I'm not first of all, I'm not a sore loser.
I know.
I'm a sore winner.
Right.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry,
Kerry Wong.
Well, yeah, it's like watching a football game where the refs blow the call and the, you know, you hear the ambient audio from the coach saying, "Dadgummit, I don't mind getting my butt beat, but I hate to have it taken from me."
Yeah,
it got taken from us, Greg.
Well, you know, isn't that good though? Think about it. Don't you have to feel better about America to know that they stole the election twice? Right?
Well, yeah, because for a while there, I was running around wondering just kind of where I was living. You know, sort of looking at those people, and I still look at them this way. A lot fewer of them now, but the cars running around with the W, the president, yes. Stickers on them, and I just drive by them like, and I'd be, you know, run, be at risk in traffic because I'm looking at these people like something in a freak show.
Yeah.
You know, what are you thinking?
To themselves and others is the problem. But you know, I mean, yeah, exactly. So you know that's the whole point of our madness, is to give you. No, but the truth is that actually most people got the information. That's why they do have to black it out, because people would get darn angry if they got the info. And now, you know, now they've got us all whipped up with Iran, and these are not nice people, I will admit.
Yeah.
No one's going to, you know, take that away. That's not the point. But the next war isn't with Iran. That's a Punch and Judy show to keep the price of oil up. The real war is with Venezuela and Hugo Chavez, the president there.
Yeah,
you look in the book. I mean, the other thing about the book that you would know, that you know, your readers may not, or your listeners may not know, is that there's like about 60 illustrations which lay out the documents, not only the information, but the documents you're not seeing. One is from the inside the Department of Energy, where they've shown, where the Department of Energy has figured that there's more oil in Venezuela than in Saudi Arabia. And unfortunately for the U.S., Venezuela is, you know, the oil's under Venezuela, but Venezuela is under Hugo Chavez. Right. And so now they've got to remove him with prejudice.
What's our oil doing under Venezuela?
Yeah, exactly. Well, even worse, Chavez has made us an offer that makes Bush very unhappy. He's offered to drop the price of oil by one-third. One-third. But under a couple conditions. Number one, no more Cold War on Latin America. And that means don't steal the Mexican election, which they're doing right now.
Exactly.
That's one. But he said the other is, while King Abdullah, like I said before, lends back the money that we send him. I mean, for a nice interest rate. I mean, for a guy who, you know, there is a Quranic, the Quran says he can't charge interest, but King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia seems very good at charging his pound of flesh.
His Quran doesn't have that chapter.
Right. But but Chavez of Venezuela says, we will give you the oil cheap, but we're keeping the money here in Venezuela. I mean, he is just nuts. We're an oil colony. We are one of the poorest nations. You know, we were destitute poor, and yet a massive lender to the United States Treasury. So he just, now that all the money stays in Venezuela, the place is booming.
Well, I noticed Citgo's splitting.
What? I'm sorry?
Citgo's leaving.
Yeah.
Leaving the United States. They're closing a third of their stations and getting out of the business.
I know, well, because they're getting so much heat. But one thing that they are doing is that they do have these big refineries. And, you know, one of the things that Chavez did is that Citgo refineries became a refugee point for the people in New Orleans. And when the flood hit, Chavez loaded up his planes with 18 desalinization units, generators, rescue teams with dogs, you know, rescue and hunt teams with dogs, the whole thing, put them in the air, and the State Department sent them back when they were flying over the Caribbean.
We don't want them voters surviving.
You know, it's like, first of all, they might vote for Chavez.
Right. Yeah, right. It might be in
place. Yeah, well, he's just trying to win support of the public. Well, yeah. That's called democracy. When you do the right thing and you get the vote.
And he's got such a talent for poking George with a sharp stick.
Yeah. Well, first of all, they're annoyed because he was elected.
Then they're annoyed because they couldn't get him out in their crappy little coup.
Yeah, and they had their fake where they kidnapped him. I remember. One of the stories I broke was that he was kidnapped and not he. The story in the United States press was that he had resigned. And I asked the New York Times reporters, where did you get the idea that this guy resigned? He said, "Well, the State Department told him."
Judy Miller told us.
Yeah, there you go. There's the investigation for you. And so staying up all night. And the embassy, Venezuelan embassy in London, finally reached an open cell phone, found out the guy's kidnapped. And, and of course, the U.S. government was behind this little goofball operation. But, you know, it's not like it benefits us. Like I say, he wants to drop the price of oil on the condition that he's not going to lend the money back for Georgia's oil wars. He says, we'll keep it here. In fact, he took $20 billion out of the U.S. Federal Reserve and lent it to Ecuador and Argentina. So that's going to get him. I mean, so Pat, as I point out in the book, in a chapter called The Assassination of Hugo Chavez, that's why Bush's spiritual advisor, Reverend Pat Robertson, said, you know, Hugo Chavez thinks you're trying to assassinate him. I think we ought to just go ahead and
Greg, that's good.
That is, you like that? Yeah, I actually learned that from Al Franken. I'm not kidding you. he did the audio version of my last book. Did a great Robertson for me.
That's restaurant quality, Greg.
Actually, Robertson did a good Robertson. I secretly tape recorded him. That's the other thing that's not done. It's kind of undercover stuff. When I went to see Pat Robertson, he ran me through a metal detector. So I wouldn't, you know, have, you know, I think they were a bit nervous. Not that I'd knock him off, but that I might record him. So I handed his security guard, I said, hold my lighter for me. It just set off the alarm. And he didn't notice that I didn't have any cigarettes. the lighter was the...
Well, you know, you're a radical, Greg. It was probably for the shoebox.
So I was thinking, gee, I should have had cigarettes. I said, what a dumb cover. What if they said, where's your cigarettes? You know, so I don't always get it exactly.
Well, that's the video camera next time.
Yeah, no, I do. We do secret video, too. But that was the other thing. In the chapter on Iraq... about secret oil plans of Iraq. The oil company, I talked to oil company executives, and one of them called Harper's Magazine, where I published the story, the creation of the secret plans for the oil of Iraq. And he said, you know, I'm going to sue you guys. I never even talked to Greg Palin. And the Lewis Lapham, the editor of Harper's at the time, said, well, okay, we'll retract the story. You just tell us what part of this audio tape isn't you. And, you know, it's like, you know, so, the, you know, and people say, you know, I was told by National Petroleum Radio, they said, well, you know, we don't do that. I said, I know.
What a confession. We don't do journalism.
Yeah, we don't do that. And but, you know, yeah, I know that they don't do that. But and the reason why, so why do you do that? I said, because they lie. They lie. They just, and just, you know, we didn't even speak to Greg Palin. You know. So that's why you have to record these characters. And but they are too, that will not happen on American TV radio. These are the old gumshoe investigative reports. That's what, I mean, they're really quite fun to do, but they're very expensive, very difficult, time-consuming.
And occasionally, I would imagine, dangerous.
Yeah, but I try to keep my, I'm a coward. That's probably the reason I'm still here. So, I've made a few mistakes that I won't made my staff very, very nervous. But what I'm really concerned about, by the way, are my sources. Some of my sources have really faced a real danger. I wrote a story about George Bush Sr.'s gold mines in Africa. Now, I know that probably many of you have never heard of George Bush's gold mines in Africa. You're not supposed to, because anyone who ever writes about them gets their behind sued off. I was actually sued by George Bush's boys. I went back down, but... the problem was that one of my sources about killing them at his mine, miners murdered him.
Buried alive.
The source, who's an internationally famous environmental lawyer, lives in Tanzania, was arrested for sedition. And, you know, I mean, and his partners were beat up. People get disappeared. I've just seen people's lives and careers ruined and people in serious danger. So it's the sources I always worry about. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm just reporting, I'm just telling their story. They're the courageous ones. But if there are, by the way, courageous people out there who do have a story for me, I do want to hear it. And go to gregpalace.com. That's www.gregpalace.com. Just contact Greg. I don't get to all the stories immediately, but I really try to find out what's going on. You got, especially what I really love is you got a document marked secret or confidential that they tell you to shred or burn. Hey, don't waste it. Paste it.
Yeah, exactly.
GregPalace.com.
Beautiful idea. Well, you know, if you feel like taking a wander around the hills and hollers of Appalachia, we've got a whale of a story for you someday, Greg.
Yeah, actually.
Mountaintop removal, man. It's the biggest con. Well, this side of oil.
Actually, I was just talking to Bob Edwards about that, who used to be on NPR, but he decided...
Wrote a wonderful book, came through my neck of the woods here.
Yeah, and I think that is a story. And that's what you're not getting. Instead, you're getting, you know, stem cells.
Right.
So, you know...
We've got coal industry-backed fake environmental groups opposing windmills in West Virginia, Greg.
Yeah.
Because they destroy their view shed, while two counties over, 3 billion-year-old mountains are blown up. You know, literally, they're not mountains anymore.
Yeah. Well, you didn't need that mountain anyway. You want to clear the view out. Right?
Well, you know, yeah. How are you going to put a Walmart on a mountain? Greg, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
This has been a wonderful conversation. I can't wait. I can't wait for the next opportunity that we have to chat.
Well, Bob, we will. And, you know, like I say, I'll kind of catch you in the R madhouse there. And, you know, come to www.gregpalace.com and you can actually hear, like, Al Frank and others reading the books and Jeanine Garofalo and others reading from R madhouse. In fact, I have Jella Biafra as the voice of Osama bin Laden.
You can't beat that.
Yeah, can't beat that.
Well, I'm a frequent visitor, so is my producer, my darling wife. And I know that a lot of the listeners are, and frankly, I want this book on every bookshelf because it's almost like a reference manual. It's that well put together.
Hey, wow, thanks.
And it's fun, but you know, it's a reference manual that you can get a giggle out of while you're reading too.
Yeah, while you're crying.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's laughing or crying. I prefer the laughing.
Hey, Bob, do the best.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Greg Palast, author of Armed Madhouse. Go there. Read the book. Now, I want to move on. I know we're getting close to the top of the hour, but I've also got waiting, and she has been ever so patient, Samsara Taylor. Are you there, Samsara?
Yeah, I am. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm so tickled you could join us, because you're still down in Jackson, Mississippi, are you not?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Let me do just a little bit of lead in, and you can join in as well. You know, if you were listening there while we were talking to Greg Palast, he was talking about the culture wars.
Yep.
You're in the trenches of the culture wars right now, aren't you?
Sure am. Yeah. Yeah. Right down here, I'm in Jackson, Mississippi right now, where there's one abortion clinic left in the entire state, and this extreme, you know, Christian fascist sort of.
No, they're not sort of. They really are.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. The Operation Save America, that's what they call themselves. They used to be Operation Rescue.
Until they got sued.
Come down to shut down the last clinic in the state. They are, you know, they parade around with their Jesus signs and their gruesome fake bloody fetuses and T-shirts. You'd love this. Homosexuality is a sin. Islam is a lie. Abortion is murder. They're planning on burning a Quran one of these days while they're down here and burning the gay pride flag. And these people they have for years terrorized abortion clinics, been associated with publishing the home addresses and photographs of abortion providers. They've been associated with a lot of the people who've actually gone on to kill abortion providers. But the most sinister thing about them is that they're actually their connections up, not just their connections to the rabid, ready to kill on the ground fanatics, but actually the fanatics in the halls of power, the Tony Perkinses, who, you know, has a lot of influence on power, Pat Robertson, who
Dobson.
Greg was just talking about. Yeah, Dobson. And all the way up to the White House, they have their ideological kin, you know, a rabid fundamentalist.
Well, I've got a Tony Snow today, the White House spokesgoon. Was asked about why Dear Leader was going to veto this stem cell research bill, and he said, well, basically, it's because he's opposed to murder.
Yeah, this man who's how many Iraqi mass graves and
over
massacres?
Over a tenth of a million. Yeah, over a tenth of a million retroactively aborted Iraqis, but he's opposed to murder. Makes you want to scream, doesn't it, Samsara?
And the man who killed more people as governor on death row than any other governor ever. Yeah, no, he deserves a medal for hypocrisy if he wasn't, you know, if it wasn't so dangerous what he's doing.
No, I was thinking a medal for evil, but, you know, if we...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It would be more... So I came down here, just let me put it this way. I came down here, I'm with the World Can't Wait Drive Out the Bush Regime movement. And we are a nationwide organization. We're a movement that's actually connecting up and saying, look, the torture needs to be stopped. The war in Iraq needs to be stopped. The lies, the spying, the attacks on women's reproductive rights, and not just abortion, but birth control is being assaulted.
Right, because those cause silent abortions.
Well, you know, it's all part of God's plan for women to be incubators and breeders. And, you know, it's interesting. There's not a single pro-life organization in the country, not one, that supports birth control, which says a lot about what their real agenda is. Of course, they know they can't come out and say that as fully, and even a lot of the people who participate and consider themselves anti-abortion don't actually understand what it is the leaders of the anti-abortion movement are really going for. So we came down here and said all these things need to be stopped, but we cannot be fighting these outrages. I want to talk a little bit about what's happening in Mississippi, but it's not enough to fight these outrages one at a time, one clinic by one clinic, one new outrage in the war, a Haditha, the recent rape of the 14-year-old girl, one after another, we actually have to take the counteroffensive nationwide.
Yeah, because
it all ends
at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And it all ends when George Bush is peacefully and legally removed from office.
Yeah, this is exactly what we're called, drive out the Bush regime. And we're calling for mass mobilizations, actually, October 5th, all across the country. And that's why we came here, to stand with this clinic, but also to say, you know, unless we reverse this direction, we're marking time to the Supreme Court you know, overturns Roe, or marking time until you know, we've seen a pattern. I know you started on the culture war, but I think it's I'm going to have to call you back because my phone.
Okay, what we'll do.
I will call you back in a second.
Okay, yeah. Great. We'll go ahead and do the news, and we'll come out of the news and get back to it, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
And that is Samsara Taylor. World can't wait. Drive out the Bush regime in Jackson, Mississippi. It is time for the news. There's coverage out there of this, and it's been largely excluded or precluded by a lot of the other things going on in the world. But in case you were wondering, the Middle East isn't the only place that has dangerous, deadly fundamentalists. We have them here, too, and they call themselves brother and pastor. And they're fundy weirdos, and they attack poor women. What kind of sleazy coward attacks poor women? We will be talking with Samsara some more after the break. This is the Head On Radio Network. I am Bob Kincaid.
News Network. It's the seventh day of fighting between Israeli troops and Hezbollah guerrillas in Lebanon. Today, a Hezbollah rocket struck northern Israel, killing one woman, and Israeli strikes into Lebanon killed at least 16. 235 Lebanese and 13 Israelis have so far been killed in the last week. As the violence continues, an Israeli general said today that the offensive could last for weeks. And Prime Minister Ehud Olmert told a visiting UN delegation that the strikes will continue until the Israeli soldiers being held hostage are released and Israel's safety is secured. Approximately 350 Americans have so far been evacuated from Lebanon. Various ships and U.S. naval vessels are involved in transporting the roughly 25,000 Americans. However, some of them say they don't want to leave. A White House official says more than 2,400 people will be evacuated by air and sea tomorrow. In Brussels, UN Secretary General Kofi Annan renewed calls for a larger and stronger international peacekeeping force in the Middle East. He called on European and other countries to supply troops for the new force, which he implied would have a greater military role than the peacekeeping force that's already there. In southern Iraq today, a suicide bomber lured day laborers into his minibus near a Shiite shrine. He then detonated himself, killing at least 53. It was one of the deadliest attacks since Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's National Unity Government took office in April. On Capitol Hill, the Senate passed a bill that would extend stem cell research, but President Bush says he will veto the bill on moral grounds. In Washington, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez testified before Congress about a program run by the National Security Agency. He testified that President Bush blocked an internal investigation of the domestic spying program. In New Orleans, the state attorney general has charged a doctor and two nurses with second-degree murder. They were arrested as part of the investigation into whether patients were euthanized in the days after Hurricane Katrina to speed the hospital's evacuation. Weather forecasters say the second hurricane of the season, Tropical Storm Beryl, has formed off the coast of North Carolina. The eastern part of the state is under storm watch. In Indonesia, rescuers now say that more than 339 people were killed in yesterday's tsunami. More than 600 were injured, and 136 remain missing. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business News is next.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
U.S. wholesale prices went up by 0.5% last month, but the Labor Department says that amount is only 0.2% when food and energy are excluded. Toyota is recalling more than 400,000 cars, including the Prius, Echo, and Yaris models. The company says a faulty engine part could cause an oil leak in the engine. The SEC is investigating dozens of firms that sponsor so-called free lunch investment seminars. The probe revolves around companies that lure the elderly to seminars by offering free food. The FDA has approved a birth control rod that can be implanted in a woman's upper arm for up to 3 years. Implanon is made by Organon USA and has been used in 30 countries. Microsoft has filed 26 lawsuits aimed at clamping down on pirated software. The suits were filed in 7 states yesterday, including Georgia, Colorado, and New Jersey. The president of the NAACP is calling for a boycott of some companies. He is asking that people not shop at companies with poor records of hiring blacks or advertising in black communities. A group from Oklahoma City has announced plans to buy the Seattle Supersonics and the Seattle Storm. The group will reportedly keep the teams in Seattle. Light Sweet Crude settled at $73.54 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow is up 52 points, NASDAQ up 6 points, S&P 500 up 2 points. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Brian Reznor wouldn't lie now, would he? It is the second hour. I'm Bob. Tuesday, and we've got a humdinger on our hands. Just to background you up a little bit, a truly religion industry fascist organization called Operation Save America, formerly Operation Rescue until they were sued into submission and then reinvented themselves, has descended on Jackson, Mississippi because they don't like the idea that poor women may go to Jackson, Mississippi and obtain an abortion, control over their own bodies. They have assaulted, among other things, they assaulted the Unitarian Universalist congregation there. Okay. They assaulted St. John's Episcopal Church there. And you've seen all this happen, haven't you, Samsara?
Yeah, we were actually staying. The Universalist Church opened its doors to volunteers and activists from all over the country who came down. And then they held a forum. It was very wonderful for religious people and for their congregation to talk about what was happening. It was a very civic-minded, very good thing that they were doing. And Operation Save America, this is actually a step up from the kinds of assaults they've done on clinics before. They actually came to where the Universalist Church was holding its meeting, to where the activists were staying, and they brought out their huge, gruesome, bloody fake fetus signs and fetal pornography, and they brought out their big, you know, God hates fag signs. And
they've got those too.
Oh, they got it all. Trust me, they got it all. There's no describing what these, and then they spew, violence-laced rants at the church. They got up there and they said, you know, they called out the minister by name and said, you're a minister of Satan. They taunted and they went after, you know, the gay people in the crowd. These people, when they haven't been here, before they got here, the latest campaign they've been doing, Operation Save America, has been going to public high schools in North Carolina and harassing gay students and shutting down, trespassing, getting arrested on high schools with these signs, getting shutting down gay straight alliance clubs on the high schools and trying to set a national precedent that can be used in other places. These people are, they really are the stormtroopers and the shock troops of a tidal wave of theocracy that then gets, you know, it's sort of, it's a very sinister pattern. What they do in the streets intimidates people and then gets people accepting laws they never would have accepted before because at least they're, you know, more calmly debated and discussed. At least they're, you know, enforced by law as opposed to these fascist thugs. But it's really no, not that different than the pattern in Nazi Germany where you had the stormtroopers come through and then people were often relieved when Hitler came behind and passed, you know, racial laws or different laws that, that were at least, you know, enforced a little bit more systematically and less
well, there's
sporadically.
There's another insidious side to this, I think, because, among other things, this crowd of goons was instrumental in a holding by the court system of the United States that says that they can, like Planned Parenthood now, organizations like that, cannot use the racketeer-influenced corrupt organization statutes as it was used on the Klan and the Aryan Nation and the mob, that they specifically can't use the RICO Act to pursue these religious thugs. So part of this, I'm afraid, is to try to engender confrontation in these situations and go and use right-wing fascist judges to rewrite the laws. You know, you want to talk about activist judges.
Yeah.
These are the true activist judges to tell law-abiding people that they cannot peacefully oppose these creeps.
Well, this is very important. This is part of why, you know, in the call for the World Can't Wait movement, we say, you know, this government is moving each day closer to a theocracy where a narrow and hateful brand of intolerant Christianity will rule. And I think that one of the things that this movement and their ideological kin in the White House are trying to do is to invert the so-called separation of church and, I mean, there is a separation of church and state, but to invert it and actually invert what it means definitionally in terms of, instead of freedom of religion, meaning that the, you know, that the state won't interfere in people's personal practice, but also that the state won't favor one religion or another, what they actually want to do is, and it's spelled out in the Constitutional Restoration Act, they actually want to make it so that no government, court, or other legislature can rule on anything having to do with religion, or it would interfere with their religious practice. In other words, you know, if you want to say, I refuse to hire gay people, I refuse to hire Muslims, I refuse to hire anybody who's not my brand of Christianity, and somebody wants to sue you, even if you work in a public office, somebody wants to sue you, a court would say, oh, this has to do with religion. I can't hear it.
We don't have jurisdiction.
Yeah, of church and state. And it would go on at any level. If you want to declare that, you know, Jackson is a Christian town and everybody who's not a Christian has to get out, you couldn't challenge that in court. These are, you know. And
that and bill, it's worth it. I hate to interrupt. I don't mean to.
No, go ahead.
It's worth noting that the bill that you're talking about that would take away the jurisdiction of the federal courts to decide questions of church and state, that bill is introduced every session of Congress since the Republicans took a majority in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a few more co-sponsors every year.
And it does reveal where they want to take things. And I think right now, I think one of the dangers is I think that people have learned to live with the knowledge that, okay, we know there's these, you know, this lunatic fringe Christian fanatics. They kill doctors. That hasn't happened in a while. You know, they harass gay people, you know, students and stuff like this. But, you know, and there's a lot of, and I'm going to be honest because I think this affects probably even people who are listening. People who say, well, at least I know there's people who think like me, and these people are too crazy, they'll never get very far. I think that we've learned to live with them for a while, and there's a way that it sort of inert us to this, and I think actually what we're seeing now is they're getting in position to win, you know, and I think that we have to sort of wake up and go, oh, they have introduced this bill over years, but now they're in a place, they've got the Supreme Court, a whole different Supreme Court than they had before, they've got Congress, they have Bush, they're
and gonna... even without this law in place. One of the things that was blithely glossed over by the Democrats who said, I believe that Sam Alito is a fine American, and then refused to filibuster him, gutless wonders that they were. One of the things they glossed over was this man, without the law that you're talking about, just the existing federal law, this man, Samuel Alito, wrote an opinion that said it was absolutely all right to discriminate against a person for their race,
yeah,
for their gender, for their sexual orientation, for their religious preferences. He said that was all okay because the government had no business in the hiring practices of a private entity.
Yeah.
We're already there.
Well, we are, and this is another part of, you know, our message down here is that, like you said, the Democrats did not filibuster. The Democrats right now around abortion, it is criminal. There, you know, Chuck Schumer came out and said abortion, I'm quoting, he said it's a game, quote, that the Democrats can no longer afford to play, defending abortion. You know, and he was making excuses for the rabidly anti-choice candidates like Bob Casey, who they're running in Pennsylvania. You have Hillary saying abortion is a tragic choice, which totally gives the moral high ground to these religious fanatics when there is nothing wrong with women controlling their bodies and their destinies. That's actually something that was celebrated when it became legal and should be celebrated and cherished and defended unapologetically right now. And I think that right down the board, whether you look at the Patriot Act, whether you look at the torture, whether you're talking about the war in Iraq, whether you're talking about, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance, when, you know, which is not a major issue, but here you have a challenge saying under God and the Pledge of Allegiance is sort of religious. And where were the Democrats? They were out on the steps of the White House or Congress holding their hands over their hearts reciting the Pledge of Allegiance with under God together with all the Republicans.
Because they will,
right now,
they know they'll be pandered to death if they don't. There is no, there is very little in the way of guts in Congress. It's a sad fact that we have to deal with. This business about abortion is a tragedy. Horse hockey. A tragedy is only a tragedy if it is a public knowledge thing. This is a quiet and private decision made by a woman and her medical professional based upon her needs and her best interests. And I don't want to hear, well, what about the best interest of that wad of tissue? Screw those people. I'm sorry, I'm being really ugly here, but I'm sick of them, Samsara. I despise them. I loathe them. And we have real problems in America, and these goons are... I'm sorry.
No, you're right, but here's the thing. Is people should say, I entirely appreciate what you're saying. And, you know, one of the things that happens is they take evolution out of the schools, and they don't teach people science. They don't actually know that a fetus is not a baby. People don't know these things. They're being intellectually disarmed, and that's a whole part of this high-tech dark ages that's being imposed. And I do think it's coming, and part of the reason I'm running through the Democrats' track record on this is that people who think like you, people who think like me, people who think differently than either of us, who don't want to see us go there and actually, you know, to the point of no return, which does happen eventually, we have to rely on ourselves and we have to get out of the killing confines of restricting our political imagination, our political will, even our sacrificing our principle to go into a ballot box. And I appreciate, I know... Greg's work, Greg Pallas, your last guest, and
yes,
Kristen Miller, and brilliant exposure on how the Bush regime they've stolen the elections. But what I'm also arguing is that even with a fair election, right now we're at a place where if the Democrats win, the people are still going to lose. There's still going to be a mandate for this whole Bush program because they're running on the same platform or a slightly lesser version. And if we're going to deny them a mandate, if we're going to actually stop this direction, it's going to take something different.
Well, it's going to
take
vast people,
resistance.
It's going to take people like you and the overall organization in World Can't Wait, drive out the Bush regime. It's going to take me. It's going to take people of courage, Samsara, to stand up and redefine these issues. These issues cannot, as long as we play in their frame, we lose. I got an article I'm looking at right now. The headline says, Hillary, don't inflame conservatives. And this is a quote from Hillary Clinton. She says, we do things that are controversial. We do things that try to inflame their base. We are wasting time. This was a speech to the Arkansas Federation of Democratic Women.
Yeah, this is like, I don't know, you saw the Pragmatic Progressive Women for Casey? I don't know if you watched the Dave Chappelle show ever.
I have.
When it was on. Okay, you know his character, Clayton Bigsby?
Oh, yes.
He's hilarious. He's the blind, black, white supremacist.
Right.
Who always comes out with the hood on and preaches, you know, racial hatred. But he doesn't know and he's never been told that he's actually black because he's blind. Anyway, it's a spoof. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah, I laughed.
But I hear Pragmatic Progressive Women for Casey, and all I can think of is Clayton Bigsby. The black white supremacists. I think of these women who are out there stumping for one of the most violently anti-woman platforms.
Yeah, it's like women against uteruses.
Yeah, only Clayton has an excuse and these women don't. And this is typical of the Democratic Party right now. And I do think that it means being in the streets. It means being heard. It means actually stepping out and not one issue by one issue, apologetically, defensively. You know what? The right wing is inflamed. No matter what. They find reasons to inflame themselves. Who knew stem cell was a concept? I mean, who even heard of stem cells? Honestly. I mean, scientists did, and it was relevant, and it's significant. And that's another discovery that should be celebrated, too. It could actually contribute to the quality of human life. But the public wouldn't even know about it. The right wing comes up with issues to inflame themselves. They're already going.
Oh, yes, they do.
That, you know, the left, the progressive people, the sane people, have to actually get out there and quit compromising and holding their tongues and say, okay, we have right on our side, and we're going to get in the streets because there's no other way. This is our option at this point. This is what we're calling for. October 5th, bring this to a halt. In every city, every town, people who've never marched before, people who did it and thought it didn't do any good, get back out there because this is the only way we're going to change the political atmosphere and have a different message be heard.
Can I ask you a tough question? Because this is an issue that I've brought up in our discussions from time to time. And I believe in taking to the streets. My God, I believe in boots on the ground. I believe, you know, when you see what's going on in Mexico, when a million people are willing to take to the streets and say, no, you don't get to steal my vote.
Yeah.
Then you will get change. When you see people surrounding presidential palaces in the Baltic states and saying, no, you don't get to install your thug again. We voted for the other guy. And even if you poisoned him, he's going to run the government.
Yeah.
But there's a commonality in all of that, Samsara. You're talking about October 5th.
Yeah.
I'm talking about what happens on October 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th, and however long it takes.
Well, I'm with you on that. I think that's a good question. Because if we're just a symbolic protest, I think it's a very good question. If we just get out there and we're hoping that somebody in power listens, then we are already seeing that they're not. This is my feeling. What we do need to do, though, is there are times when if you manifest and you actually get people to step out of their daily routine and be in the streets in massive numbers in an uncompromising spirit saying, you know, bring it to a halt. Very simple message, and we're not going home. Then you actually can puncture the atmosphere and set a different atmosphere and set a different momentum. Who has initiative in society? This is something that we saw. I mean, right now the majority of the population is against war. This wouldn't have been the case had people not actually stepped out there and changed the conversation on this, had Cindy Sheehan not stepped out there. And part of the reason why Bush is so unpopular now, part of the reason we have the raw material, I would say, to go further in a resistance movement, to do with people manifesting all at once on a certain level that changes the equation and changes the conversation. And so, no, the work is not done after October 6th, but it will take place in a different context. And it won't if we just sort of, you know, even, and I'm all for letters to the editor, I'm all for, you know, people doing things in their communities, but if we don't actually come forward and seize the national stage and create and manifest a message that everybody, the Republicans, the Democrats have to respond to, the progressive people see and get inspired to join in, and that reactionaries have to, they see it too, and they have to scratch their head and think, am I so sure, or maybe I should wonder what I'm thinking. You know what, I hate to say this, but I had this one, we got started late, and I have another interview scheduled. I would love to keep talking with you.
Well, that's quite all right. I'm sorry to get to you late. It has been a wonderful conversation. I hope we can do it again. As you take your activism, your voice, and your passion, and your dedication to other places, I'm proud of you for being where you are.
Well, thanks for talking. Maybe we could even talk later in the week. I could tell you more. There's activities all week long. Operation Save America is here. We're here. Now is here. I'll tell people, come to worldcantwait.org.
Absolutely.
And And I wish you the best.
We've posted it on our website, and I thank you, and I wish you the best, Samsara.
Okay, thanks.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Samsara Taylor, the worldcan'twait.org. The world can't wait. Drive out the Bush regime. Now, I don't know for a fact, but I sense that Ms. Taylor might be a little bit younger than me. And at this point in American history, because, by the way, this is history you're living through. At this point in American history, we've got to have the optimism and the determination of the Samsara Taylors. And the world can't wait. And young people who see that they are being ripped off and have themselves determined not to allow the burglar to leave the house with the cotton picking silver. This is where we are. This is why I raised the question with her that I did. Because, you see, it is important to participate on October 5th. Go out. Find a way. If you live out in the country like I do, get yourself a cold glass of lemonade, fold out the lawn chair, put up a big old sign that says, World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, and let people see that as they drive by. Because when people, you know, this is the lecture from the end of Alice's Restaurant where, you know, two people do it. Well, no, and then 10 people do it. It's a cult, and you know, but you know, if 20 people, it's a movement. If you stand alone, you do not stand alone. If you're standing there alone, and somebody drives by and says, you know, look at that guts, look at that courage, you might change one mind. And if you change one mind, that one mind might change another. And the next thing you do, next thing you know, maybe, just maybe, we can save this country. But organizations like this Operation Save America, they sicken me. It reminds me of that stupid Twinkle Kavanaugh from Alabama, the GOP chairman down there that we talked about last night. We invite Chairman Dean to come down here and show America how liberal he is. Show Alabamians how liberal he is. And Samsara is right, because the political ads that I saw while I was down there, whether they be Democrats or Republicans, said, represent our conservative Alabama values. Somebody tell me what a conservative value is, because as far as I can tell, it has to do with trying to control women's innards. And it has to control controlling shopping. Pardon me, gentlemen, I see you looking at the silver services there. That's illegal. Now, if each of you gentlemen want to look at the silver services with a woman beside you, that will be perfectly acceptable. Ladies, we can't have you in here looking at the biker gear together. I know, I'm using stereotypes. I understand that. But stereotypes are what the fiends use, and this is how they think. It's not how I think, it's how they think. And there's a part of me, good God, Billy Bob, there is a part of me that, you know, that would have a real hard time controlling myself down in Jackson, Mississippi. Oh, we've got this running gag in the family here where every now and then when we get real frustrated, one of us will look up and go, Dear Jesus, please don't let that 36-ounce Hillerich and Bradsby Louisville slugger appear in my hands right now, because I'd use it. And I'd have to just be sitting there in Jackson, Mississippi, praying that prayer the whole time. Because you know what? I'll be honest. I can't think of rotten enough things to happen to Operation Save America. I've seen their video footage. We're being persecuted by the fascist police in Jackson, Mississippi. We're peaceful Christians. Now, what? Dig it. I mean, we talked about it a little bit. These goons assaulted the Unitarians and the Episcopals. And then they put out a press release that said, Jesus Christ went back to church today as we took him to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation and St. John's Episcopal Church. Jesus Christ was finally received into these places. That's what you're up. That's what we're up against, and Samsara is right because they're not getting anywhere. You know, we're holding. You know, now's always going to be there. Now we'll show up wherever these freaks show up and oppose them. World can't wait. They'll show up. I don't have to show up. They'll show up. I don't know if you realize it or not, Sunshine, but you better show up. Alone or together in a group, you better show up. Because you know what? Half the battle is showing up. Half the battle is showing up. Operation Save America shows up. Next question. Do we? This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
And I'm Jesse Russell.
Congressman John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan, chaired a congressional roundtable on the auto industry crisis on Tuesday. Conyers invited UAW President Ron Gettelfinger, among others, to testify. Conyers wants immediate congressional involvement to find ways to provide relief for workers devastated by auto plant closings. He has sponsored a bill that would protect the rights of workers in corporate bankruptcies.
A 19-month-long strike at a Ormitz smelter in Hannibal, Ohio, has finally come to an end. The new contract has been ratified, and the United Steelworkers have agreed to drop bankruptcy-related charges against the company. The contract covers more than 800 employees and includes a signing bonus, wage increases, and a new health care plan that requires a copay. Work stopped at the aluminum plant in November of 2004, and the plant has been idle since January of 2005.
WakeUpWalmart.com says a new Walmart website is stooping to personal attacks and smear campaigns as Walmart seeks to block higher wages and better health care for its workers from being forced on the company by public opinion. Wake Up Walmart spokesman Chris Kafinas.
When I got involved in politics, I never honestly thought you could be attacked for wanting better wages and better health care for 1.3 million workers. Boy, was I wrong. Evidently, there are some individuals in this country, specifically these ones who work for Walmart, who believe that the only people that should have are them and everyone else should be a have-not. And that's a tragic statement about their value.
Kafinas says his group won't take the personal attacks passively. It already has a website up called A Bunch of Greedy Right-Wing Liars Who Work for Walmart.com.
Negotiations have stagnated and nurses are considering a second strike at Finley Hospital in Dubuque, Iowa. The Service Employees International Union represents the nurses and says negotiations have broken down. The hospital, on the other hand, insists progress has been made. More than 300 nurses are represented by the union, with the firing of one nurse at the forefront of discussion. Alice Week was fired for what the union says was speaking out against the hospital's negotiating tactics. Week's reinstatement is now on the union's list of demands, and the hospital refuses to discuss the issue. The nurses struck for 3 days earlier this month. They are currently working without a contract.
Here's today's economic report. In a book called The Global Class War, economist Jeff Foh says America's rich and powerful are abandoning the social contract that essentially helped create the American dream. With global economic policies designed to benefit capital, let the rich shift capital easily and use cheap labor anywhere on the globe, American living standards are losing out. Foh argues if those living standards are to be defended, then the global economy must be democratized, starting with a social contract for North America. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Mess your mind.
25
woman,
minutes before the hour.
Mess your mind. Woman,
I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On for a Tuesday night. A couple of wonderful conversations we've had. Samsara Taylor from World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime, worldcan'twait.org. And prior to that, Greg Pallast, gregpallast.com, author of the newly released Armed Madhouse, obtained this book. It is. There's a lot of it's like a reference manual, fact after fact after fact, that you can use just like a lead pipe to beat weird little conservative neocon jerks over the head. Because this is irrefutable stuff. The cons love to say,
I was looking at Ann Coulter's book the other day, and like, you know, it's got like footnotes and an index and stuff, and like she, like, you know, makes up places like where she says she found her stuff that she talks about in the book. Well, see, that's the trick. In Greg Pallast's book, you will find an index, painstakingly researched, and as you read, you know, as you read the passages in the book, he'll tell you where he got the stuff, chapter and verse.
You know, Ann Coulter releases a book in the neocon movement and Regnery Press. See,
she sources her material. But then, you know, somebody goes through it with a fine tooth comb and finds out that, you know, she's a stupid, lying, evil witch.
No offense to my Wiccan friends out there.
Blessed be.
Blessed be all of you, all of we. But that's the difference. We have facts. They got to make it up as they go along. Now, I want to share something with you. In talking with Ms. Taylor, I referenced this speech that Hillary gave in Arkansas. And our good friend Luke in Knoxville emailed me to let me know that I might. He didn't say so, but I wonder if I stepped in it. Because, lo and behold, the New York Times reported it. And said about how she said that we were wasting time. And now they've published a correction. I'm sorry, it's an editor's note. We regret the error. An article published on the website of the New York Times on Sunday reported on a speech by Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton in Rogers, Arkansas. The headline and article said that Mrs. Clinton had criticized Democrats on Saturday for, quote, wasting time, unquote, by dealing with issues that helped Republicans turn out voters rather than finding consensus on mainstream subjects. The opening sentence of the article and the headline were based on a misinterpretation of a passage in her speech in which she first referred to the Democrats' agenda in the Senate and then went on to criticize the actions of the Republican majority in Congress. She was referring to the Republican-led Congress, not Democrats, when she said, quote, "So we do other things. We do things that are controversial. We do things that try to inflame their base so that they can turn people out and vote for their candidates. I think we're wasting time. We're wasting lives. We need to get back to making America work again in a bipartisan, nonpartisan way." The Times notes the article used only the phrase wasting time, not the full quotation. Well, I understand what she meant now. I do understand. Terry Schiavo was about trying to get the weirdos out. The Iraq War was about trying to get the weirdos out. Gay marriage is about trying to get the weirdos out to the polls. stem cells. You wonder why are we debating stem cells? And Michael Scanlon, the associate of Jack Abramoff. Can you do that to a Bram? Michael Scanlon said in congressional testimony under oath that what they would do is they would take an issue. He and Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff would take an issue, and then they would email it over to Ralph Reed and get, what did they call them? The Christian wackos, all inflamed about this. And in getting them inflamed, change the course of legislation. So Hillary's right to a certain extent. But let me also say that she is incredibly wrong. The people that she's talking about, that get inflamed, that is somewhere between 18 and 22% of the electorate that call themselves values voters. Values voters. I got values. You see, I bought Dr. Dobson's book, and it says I was supposed to expose myself to my little boy in the shower. So I did it. I done it. And my wife, I think she done something to the daughter in the shower, too. So we got values. That's your values voters. Values voters. 18 to 20% of the electorate. One, you can reduce that percentage by taking normal people and getting them registered to vote and then getting them to the polls. See, that's the trick. All of these black box nightmare election scenarios that have played out to us in elections where the margin was 1%, less than 1%, 2%, 1.5%, 3%. And those elections can work at 3%. And they can do their evil magic on elections and steal them as the pigs have done repeatedly. They can do that at that level. But if you organize, and if you go out and if you ask, if you go door to door and you ask people if they'll go and register to vote, and you talk to them about issues that matter, not just to us right now living in the history that is happening, but to the history that will happen 20 years down the road, conservatism will go up like the flash paper notes in a bookie's joint being raided by the cops. That's where we are. Now, see, the other side understands that, too, and they're out there banging on doors here in wild, wonderful West Virginia. My favorite industrial thug, Don Blankenstein, announced last week that he's going to come out and he's going to target. It amazes me. These cretins, these evil bastards can use terms like target, which, means, that's where you point a weapon at somebody and drive a projectile or a spear or an arrow or a dagger through the person that you've pointed it at. The person is the target. He says he's going to target about 30 members of the West Virginia legislature who don't vote the way he likes. 30 members of the West Virginia legislature who don't vote for blowing up more mountains more quickly. 30 members of the West Virginia legislature who, and the thing is, Blankenstein, he understands he's counting on West Virginia voters to be a bunch of knuckle-walking mouth breathers. And he thinks that he can go door-to-door, because he says he's turning them loose this week in Kanawha County, that he can go door-to-door. Did you know that the same people that oppose our mountaintop mining practices that keep America free and glorious, praise Jesus, that keep America lit up and electrified, did you know those same legislators, why, they approve of murdering unborn babies? Did you know that? They don't love Jesus like you and me love Jesus. He's doing it. And he's got about 10 million reasons why he can, and they're called dollars, those 10 million reasons. And he does it all under the rubric of something he calls "and for the sake of the kids." This whole thing got started, "and for the sake of the kids," back when he was slandering a little boy who got raped in a previous Supreme Court election. But I was the only person in West Virginia who was talking about the fact that that little boy got raped. Everybody else was looking at him as though he was some monster because he, too, had done what so many victims of sexual abuse do, and he had acted out on it. And he was pilloried in this state. One of the highest moments of shame that I think this state has collectively ever known. And Don Blankenstein got away with it. And now he's going to do it again. But it's not just Don Blankenstein. You got to understand that the corporate agenda is to keep the weirdos fired up. We keep talking about sharp sticks and poking people. I'm not poking people. I want to be left alone. I want to enjoy my rights as an American and leave other people to enjoy their rights as Americans. And I don't have any business telling a woman what happens inside her uterus. And I don't have any business telling two guys whether they can pick out a China pattern or a silver service or get monogrammed towels. Or a couple of women whether they can get matching Harleys. See, I did it again. That was a joke. And gay people are no threat to a straight couple's marriage. Pastor Dan from StreetProfits.com said it so well last night on this program. If you sit down and you talk to these people, gay marriage is threatening traditional marriage. And if you sit there and you just peel the first thin little layer off that ugly onion of hate, you'll find out what she's really worried about, what he's really worried about, is the fact that no matter how hard they work, they can't get ahead. That they're crippled with credit card debt because they can't make it from the first of the month to the end of the month without going to the grocery store with the Visa. That they can't find a babysitter in their neighborhood to look after their kids so they can go to the movies once in a while and find out and renew why it was that they got married in the first place. This is our job. This is our task. And the Blankensteins and their millions are out there. They're already out there. I mean, I talk about doing these things, and I try to do them myself. If I talk it, I try to walk it. And we try to build a little bit of community, and we try to build a little bit of spirit and a little bit of hope. God, I hope we do, because Ms. Taylor is so right. She is so right. These things, we take them come and go, and we think, well, you know, we're keeping them marginalized. Honey, sunshine, they are not marginalized. They're not marginalized at all. They're on your damn stoop, and they're ready to come through your door. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Joe Vecchio is with us, joining us from Chicago. Sweet new home, Chicago. Hey, Joe, you there?
Hey, Bob.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. You got to remember, first of all, the first thing you got to know is Ann Coulter's footnotes go to 11. They go to 11 because you want that little extra bump. You know, 10 is good, but, you know, when you want that little extra push.
No, this one goes to 11.
There goes to 11. That's right. Yeah, there's a term, you know, in going with what you were talking about, and I'll talk about Chicago in a second, but in going with what you're talking about, there's a term, and I forget the exact term for it. It's a kind of phobia where people will do something because they're deathly afraid, or not do something because they're deathly afraid of something that God might do to them. You know, that God is going to punish them based upon an action.
I thought that was psychosis.
Yeah, there is it's a psychosis, it's a phobia, whatever. You know, there is an actual psychological term for it. And I think some of these people really kind of suffer from that. But, you know, and it is kind of a shame because you look at them and, you know, they vote for Republicans because of these, you know, hot button issues. And then the Republicans just turn around and screw them over. I mean, I'll use my favorite, you know, when they were calling Tom DeLay Tammany Tom.
Yeah.
For Tammany Hall. And I'm like, look, you know, Tammany Hall, yeah, that their leaders were corrupt people who, you know, really, really made it big. But you know what? They actually did things to help people. And the DeLays and the Blankensteins, what do they ever really do to help people? They don't do a darn thing to help people. They're just in there to stuff money in their own pockets. And I don't know what's scarier, the ones who say that stuff just to get people fired up or the ones who actually believe it. They're both kind of scary. I just don't know which one's worse.
Well, I don't like a thief. There's you know, the thing is, Joe, like I said earlier, these people are already in the house and they've got the silver service under their arm and they're headed for the door. And the question is whether or not we liberals, we progressives, have enough stones to stand up and stop them.
I just wish I had an answer for you, especially down in the South. I think they've been so brainwashed about stuff. I mean, I really haven't been here in Chicago long enough to see how the politics works up here, but I just can't see Chicago people putting up with the same crap. Maybe out in the burbs and stuff like that, but not around here. But that's just my general impression. I really haven't been around here long enough to get a feel for it one way or the other.
Well, Chicago has been... Chicago's way too ethnic and way too independent and way too community-oriented. I mean, you know, you're beginning to see probably the neighborhood nature of Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm in what they call Old Town Chicago, which is apparently a fairly, I don't want to say ritzy, but a pretty decent district. I mean, we're right over by the lake here. We're very close to the lake. And, in fact, if you go down to the lake, there's a little pier that jets out. You get the most spectacular view of downtown Chicago, and it's really, really nice. And the buildings here are wonderful. I lived in Atlanta for 12 years, and with the exception of a few places in some areas, most of the houses were just like these McMansions, cinder blocks and drywall. But here, you know, you have just such solid brick construction and marble construction, and just really, you know, big time city stuff. You know, like I was used to growing up in Brooklyn. And it's such a huge difference. I mean, that this place I'm living in here now is just beautiful. It's a really wonderful basement apartment. It's got nice hardwood floors and very good wooden veneers all over the place. You know, real wood, not phony plasterboard wood. It was built, you know, maybe 100 years ago. But it's wonderful, the level of construction. You just don't see that.
No.
Down there. And, you know, you didn't see, you know, but the few exceptions in Atlanta. I mean, there were some beautiful homes in Atlanta, too. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, gosh. I've lived there, too. I mean, yeah, I know.
But most, especially the new stuff. And even the new condos here are different. Because they're still, you know, they're still built in the city. But I really, you know, I tried for 12 years to try to figure out Southerners' attitudes and why they vote the way they do. And, in fact, there's a primary in Georgia going on right now, and I don't know what the results are. And I know Ralph Reed is running for lieutenant governor, and I know there was some question about him with the Indian casinos.
Oh, his star is fading.
Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see if they pick the voters pick him in the Republican primary. I don't know what, again, that primary is today, so I don't know what the results are yet. But, yeah, his star is kind of fading. The problem with these people are is that they only accept their news from a certain source. And I remember when, I believe it was...
The pulpit.
Yeah, yeah. And they get told immediately by everybody, don't watch the news on television, don't watch any news that's not coming from a Christian. You know, if you don't hear from Pat Robertson or Jerry Falwell, whoever the cult leader is, you know, you don't want to hear it. And I remember the thing with Peter Popov where he was cheating with people and he had the earpiece that he was getting information from his wife. And making it pretend like he was, you know, getting the information right from God.
Mm-hmm.
And he was found out about it. And James Randi, the great skeptic, he brought it up on The Tonight Show, which at the time was like the biggest show on nighttime TV. But Popov's hearers never heard about it. You know, his people never heard about it because they were told not to watch The Tonight Show. Don't watch anything. It's not godly. And, you know, it took 6 months for some of it to try to trickle through. And you know what? The guy's still making a ton of money.
Well, you know, Joe, I bear a great deal of love for the South. It's my home. It's my home soil. It's the and I include West Virginia in that. It's the musical rhythms of speech with which I have grown up. But I can also step back and take a look, and I can say that you say, why does the South vote like the South votes? Well, first of all, it didn't always. Jimmy Carter got elected governor in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
There have been progressives rise out of the South.
Sure.
But if you want to go back for the long look, historically speaking, it goes back to before this nation was a nation. And it is a philosophy of cultural management, if you will, that is based and frankly, Republican politics to this very day follows the same paradigm. It's based on fear.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know we think about the Indian Wars out in the West and everything, blah blah blah. The South was the place where those seeds were first planted. Fear the Indians. Fear the black slaves. The first wedge was driven between the white slaves and the black slaves. You know, we called the white indentured. Oh, they're not really slaves. Yeah, they were slaves. But they were taught, you know, you may be a slave, but at least you're a white slave. You're better.
Yeah, that's how they got a lot of them to fight in the Civil War.
But that's the 1600s that's going on, Joe. I mean, we're talking about a taproot that goes way down deep into the bedrock.
I really kind of admire the way the Southerners, you know, survive, and I love the language, I love the way they speak, and I certainly enjoy the food, and I enjoy parts of the culture, but there's just this kind of, you know, thank you, sir, may I have another, madness about that, but you know that's the way they are, and I guess I didn't have the skill to change them or to talk to them about, you know, things like
that.
Well,
it's going to take a lot more than one person. That's why a lot of this network is aimed south. I mean, I love the programming that comes from Air America. But there's nobody at Air America who's talking to Southern progressives.
Right.
The only people talking to Southern progressives who have the Southern street cred to do it are Bruce Birch and me. That's it. In the entire radio spectrum of the United States, we're it.
Right. And, you know, I lived in Atlanta for 12 years, but I was never a Southerner, and I never will be a Southerner.
Oh, no, you ain't from around here is like a Lodge High sign or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And frankly, that's not just a Southern-Northern thing, Joe. Please understand that if you come from Gwinnett County, Georgia, and you move to, pick another one, DeKalb or, you know, Make, yeah, you ain't from around here, are you?
Yeah, very local.
Yeah, it is. Everything, you know, Atlanta, recognizing Atlanta's a small town.
Whereas, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, in New York City, and, you know, New Yorkers, they'll accept anybody if they're successful. And the perfect example I like to give of that is Joe Namath. And where did Joe Namath play football? Alabama.
Yeah.
Is Joe Namath a New Yorker? Darn straight is a New Yorker. Because he came in there, he kicked butt, and he took names, and he won a championship for the Jets, and people accepted him and honored him.
And they embraced him, and he was Broadway Joe.
That's right. But you wouldn't see that, you know, if it
but
was
he also,
the way around.
But he also wasn't a Southern boy. You do know that, right?
Yeah, he was from Pennsylvania.
Beaver Falls.
Yeah.
And pride of Beaver.
But even so, I mean, you know, he played for Alabama, and he had, you know, the whole thing, and he wasn't from New York City.
Well, but New York will embrace you. You know, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere, and you can be a New Yorker.
Right. I don't know how the feeling is in Chicago just yet. I don't know as much about Chicago's history as I should.
City of the Big Shoulders. You'll be embraced.
But listen, I also wanted to give a report on hopefully when I'm going to be on the air again. And the problem I'm having right now is just purely technical.
Yeah.
Neither of the computers that we have in the house here is wired for audio.
Ah,
we have to get that settled before we get that taken care of.
Yours are catching up with you or something?
Well, what I did was I couldn't really ship my entire computer, so what I did was I just took out the hard drives, and I've got a friend I believe is buying another computer for me. The Thane's computer is not hooked up for sound, and I do not want to modify his computer because he's used to it being the way it is. And I've got an old case that he was using, but its audio card is not hooked up yet. And even so, once I get that, I have to get a network hub and a router and a long cord to get the DSL so I can get back online. But I'm working on it.
All right. Well, I hope maybe in the next couple of weeks we'll have you back because we miss you Saturday.
Well, I miss being on the air, too. It's really kind of tough. And, of course, you know, I had an interview today for a job, and I'm hoping that my job is not going to interfere with the show, but I got to put the job first if it comes to that.
Well, you know, that's kind of your watchword, isn't it?
Yeah,
get,
I know.
Now get back to work.
Yeah, but you know, the radio show is what I want to do and I want to focus. Even if I never get paid for it, I don't want to have a situation where I have to pick and choose. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Because I love doing the show and I love being a member of the Head On Network, and I'm honored that you guys, you know, have me on. But I can't do it if I'm not eating. You know what I mean?
Well, that's true.
And it's just a shame. Now, I'm going to speak with Mr. Birch, hopefully, in the next couple of days, Ben Birch. And he might be able to help me out as far as some technical stuff is concerned.
Well, if anybody has the answers on audio and technical stuff, Ben Birch has it. That's why he's the hardest working man in liberal talk.
He is the man. And, you know, and I really want to get back on the air, and I'm looking forward to it. But I just got to take it as it comes right now. And I feel bad that I feel like I'm kind of letting you guys down a bit, but I got to do what I got to do.
Hey, this is radio for working folks. We know what working folks go through. Joe, good talking to you. We got to hit the top.
All right.
Hang in there and keep us posted, all right?
All right, Bob. You take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our good friend Joe Vecchio, the Cup of Joe radio show, normally 8 p.m. Saturday evenings on the Head On Radio Network. That's 8 p.m. Eastern. It's time for the news. I'm Bob. This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. An Israeli official says the fighting in Lebanon could continue for weeks, and the country is now reportedly considering sending in ground troops. Today, the seventh day of fighting between Israel and Hezbollah, both sides continued exchanging strikes. New reports indicate an Israeli strike in Beirut near its airport. At least 12 people were killed in today's fighting, and more than 200 over the last week. Approximately 350 Americans have so far been evacuated from Lebanon. As anger grows over the delay in rescue efforts, a cruise ship arrived in Beirut late today after being delayed by an Israeli blockade. A White House official says more than 2,400 people will be evacuated tomorrow. In southern Iraq today, at least 53 people were killed and more than 100 wounded in a suicide bombing. A United Nations report says that in the first half of this year, 14,000 Iraqi civilians have been killed, an indication that violence remains widespread. In Japan, the Prime Minister says all Japanese troops have now withdrawn from Iraq. The last of the 600 non-combat troops have arrived in Kuwait and are scheduled to return to Japan next week. On Capitol Hill, the Senate passed a bill that would extend stem cell research. But President Bush has vowed a veto on moral grounds. It would be his first veto ever. Also on Capitol Hill today, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez testified that President Bush blocked an internal investigation into the NSA's domestic spying program. But he said he remains confident that its constitutionality will be upheld. In Washington, officials say veterans whose personal information was stolen will no longer receive free credit monitoring services. A White House official says that's because a laptop computer that contained the information was recovered, and the FBI says the information was not accessed. In New Orleans, the state attorney general has charged a doctor and two nurses with second-degree murder. They were arrested as part of the investigation into whether patients were euthanized after Hurricane Katrina to speed the hospital's evacuation. Weather forecasters say the second hurricane of the season, Tropical Storm Beryl, has formed off the coast of North Carolina. The eastern part of the state is under a storm watch. And in Indonesia, rescuers now say that yesterday's tsunami killed more than 340 people. Rescuers continue searching for more than 100 people who are still missing. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Pharmaceutical company Novartis plans to invest $600 million in the construction of a new flu vaccine plant in North Carolina. It's expected to produce up to 50 million doses annually for the United States alone. Microsoft has partnered with Nortel Networks to gain a foothold in the business telephone market. The companies say customers will soon be able to use phones to handle voice functions, instant messaging, and email. Wholesale prices in the U.S. went up by 0.5% last month, but the Labor Department says that amount is 0.2% when food and energy are excluded. The Chinese economy grew more than 11% between April and June, but some Chinese officials fear that a surge in investment will hurt the country. Toyota is recalling more than 400,000 cars, including the Prius, Echo, and Yaris models. The company says a faulty engine part could cause an oil leak in the engine. The SEC is investigating 40 firms in 6 states that sponsor so-called free lunch investment seminars. Their probe revolves around companies that lure the elderly to possibly fraudulent seminars by offering free food. Microsoft has filed 26 lawsuits aimed at clamping down on pirated software. The suits were filed in 7 states yesterday. Light sweet crude settled at $73.54 today. And at the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 52 points, NASDAQ up 6 points, S&P 500 up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White. It's now 5 minutes past the hour.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Stem cell research. Sorry, I'm giving away my roots. Stem cell research. It's theater, not theater. Stem cell research. I ain't from around here. This bill that passed the Senate today. I hope you understand. And you do, you do, you do. I hope others understand that they're being conned. Look at the numbers. The bill passed in the Senate 63-37. Let's pull that one apart for a couple of minutes here, could we? Let's take a little peep inside that 63-37 vote. First of all, 63-37 means that everybody showed up for the vote. Yeah, there's 100 members of the Senate, and they all showed up for the vote. 63 plus 37, yeah, that's 100. Everybody showed up for the vote, which means that everybody had a reason. Everybody had a reason for their vote. Now, there were a lot of principled people who felt like it's worthwhile. I read a list the other day, someone sent it to me, of 71 good reasons to vote in favor of stem cell research. 71 diseases that can be helped. And everything from Parkinson's disease to Alzheimer's to spinal cord injuries to juvenile diabetes. 71 good reasons to advance stem cell research. But what is odd in this, and I know some people might say that I'm very, very cynical about all this. Darn right. I have watched I have watched these Republican shenanigans go on since 1994. I have watched as these machinating SOBs have torn apart my nation. Anybody in a statistical analysis out there that has time enough to go and find the list of the people who voted for and against this? Because you see, a number of 19 Republicans voted for this stem cell research bill. And this is where, with those 19 Republicans, I guarantee you this is the focus of the story on most of your mainstream so-called professional media coverage. Look, they're stepping back from... Well, Bill, it looks as though the right-wing Republicans might not be so right-wing anymore. They're supporting a scientific cause like stem cell research. Guess what? It was our buddy David. It was our buddy David from Middle Tennessee who long ago coined a term for political machinations such as this in Washington, D.C. I remember long ago when he said, Bob, it's wrestling. Doesn't matter who wins tonight. Might be the Demon of Death or the Masked Marvel, but they both get paid the same thing, and they're going to go to lunch in the same diner after it's all over. Because it was all a show. It was all a put-on. It was all a fraud. It's all wrestling. See, it's wrestling to those 19 members of the Republican Party. Because among them was, Bill Frist, the cat killer, voted in favor of the stem cell bill. Why? Well, Bob, he's not running for re-election. I mean, those three guys, Mr. Corker and Mr. Hillary and Mr. Bryant, they're all running for for the nomination in Tennessee. But Bill Frist has nothing to... Oh, yes, he does. Because back when he diagnosed Terry Schiavo by videotape, he locked up Operation Save America and those other right-wing religion industry cretins, and they turned the TV off and they said, well, look at that. Senator Frist is a man of God. But now he has to reach out to the people who didn't turn the TV off, who were sort of, you know, Republicans, who were shaking their head. What's wrong with that man? Well, I'm a man of science, after all, and my family runs hospitals, and we understand the dire and desperate needs of people who could possibly have healing with the research stem cells could provide. Because, Sunshine, he wants to be president. And he's got to show. At the same time that John McCain moves right, going over to deliver the valedictories at Jerry Falwell's Mooney University, Frist has to move a little bit left and show that, well, you know, he doesn't necessarily believe, after all, that Adam and Eve rode to church on Sundays on a dinosaur's back. Because the dinosaurs were put in the fossil record by Satan to confuse the unbelievers. He's got to do that. How about the other ones? Who else voted from the Republican Party in favor of this stem cell research? Are they up for re-election? Are they in a state that's getting a little less red, verging a little toward pink, maybe working on purple? Be interesting to find that out, wouldn't it? And 63-37. Wait a minute. Let me see if I recall my high school civics. I took it in summer school, but it still stuck. Mr. Daniels, that was the teacher. Dear Leader says he's going to veto the stem cell bill. And veto it he will. Because what did Tony Snow say? They asked him how he could be such a cruel and rotten human being to veto this, and he said, Tony Snow, giving the answer, said, the simple answer is he thinks murder's wrong.
the president is not going to get on the slippery slope of taking something living and making it dead for the purposes of scientific research. The simple answer is he thinks murder's wrong unless it's going on in Iraq. The president is not going to get on the slippery slope of taking something living like an Iraqi baby and making it dead except for the purposes of Halliburton's contract. We didn't like Ari. Sleazy Scotty made our skin crawl. Tony Snow is a dirtbag. Honest, he's not going to get on the slippery slope of taking something living and making it dead. No. That's Frankenstein. But so many people were conned by this, it kind of breaks my heart. Actress Mary Tyler Moore appeared with Frist during the day, saying that she was very disappointed by Bush's stance. She said, "This is an intelligent human being with a heart, and I don't see how much longer he can deny those aspects of his humanity."
Oh, Rob!
Poor Miss Moore. A diabetic. A tireless worker in the cause of people suffering with diabetes. And she's been conned, too. She stood there next to Bill Frist as if Bill Frist wasn't an evil little killer. Do you suppose Mary Tyler Moore knows what Bill Frist did to those cats?
Wow.
You think Mary Tyler Moore might still be friends with Betty White, a tireless worker against animal cruelty? And look at those numbers. Let's do it. Take a look at it. The vote today was 63-37. Welcome to the main event in senatorial wrestling. Because they know it'll be vetoed, and therefore as long as there aren't 67 votes to overturn dear leader's veto, then they don't have to worry about it. It's a safe vote. And they can say to their constituency, "Well, see, I know your old granny's got Alzheimer's disease, and I love her, and I do. Lord Jesus, I do. I voted for stem cell research. I did." Except for one person. We need a little help. I know we've got listeners in Nebraska. I don't think he's up this year, but I need you guys to do me a favor, and I don't care who you elect to replace him. I want you to do the nation a favor and do the Democratic Party a favor. I want you to get the hell rid of Ben Nelson. It would have been 64-36, but Ben Nelson decided that people in Nebraska suffering from diabetes, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's, heart disease, lung disease, cancer, spinal cord crushed injuries, Ben Nelson decided those people did not deserve his representation or his help. And Ben Nelson, a Democrat, said, "See you later." So please understand, this is a fraud. This is a fraud. This was 19 Republicans saying, "Hey, we're going to fool them with this one. We got them again. Mission accomplished," like Greg Palast said. Let's go to the phones. Jim is joining us. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Doing okay, you?
Pretty good. Oh, computer problems, but that's okay. The super fast.
Indeed.
The stem cell research thing now, the status on that is what?
It's past the House and Senate.
Okay. What are the chances? Now, Bush is going to veto it, right?
Yes, he is.
Okay. What are the chances of the veto being overturned?
Zero.
Zero? Well, you know, this is the thing I hate to see when organized religion or religion of any kind tries to get itself involved in things like this, which has obviously helped so many people. And this is where I have a parting of the ways with, you know, some of these people, like, well, your old buddy, Mr. O'Brien, this morning was going on about stem cells and how that's horrible and that's a murdering this, that, and the other. You know, I think there are a lot of people out there who really see the benefits of this type of research, and there are a lot of people who suffer from the diseases you mentioned who could benefit immensely from this. That's for sure. And I think that the good Lord, in His infinite mercy, wouldn't mind us doing what He has given us the ability to do, and that is to basically to do for ourselves what He has given us the power to do.
Jim, you're right, but it's worth remembering that the religion industry 500 years ago burned women at the stake who suggested that people bathe every day.
I know that, but you know, John, you know, I'm just thinking about what John Kennedy once said, and he said, and that's very true, and it's even emblazoned on the plinth by his grave. In certain cases, God's word must be our own. And, you know, I think this is an opportunity for science.
Well, all of this merges together, Jim, because at the same time that this vote was held today in Washington, D.C., of course, members of the religion, the ultra-right-wing fascist religion industry descended upon Jackson, Mississippi, and assaulted the Episcopals and the Unitarians for believing in a woman's right to choose. They actually physically trespassed on the property of these churches and went in screaming at the ministers there.
Well, these people are doing religion no great service, and they're not doing the work of the Lord any great service when they are driven by whatever forces they believe in. Now, you know, you and I have had differences over faith and stuff like that, and don't throw rocks at me, and I'm not throwing any rocks at you. We're just talking as friends.
I understand.
But go back a long way.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm talking about. These freaks are out there assaulting the Unitarians and the Episcopals.
Well, I just hate to see this happen because it basically makes it puts religion in a bad light, and you have so many misguided people who are influenced by, I don't know. I just don't understand what the problem is with stem cells. I just don't understand what the problem is.
Well, Jim, let's be real clear about it. I mean, if you genuinely don't understand what these people's problem is with stem cells. Let me explain it. I'm not being flip, and I'm not being facetious. I'm not being sarcastic. These people, okay? I mean, you've got to really, really struggle because you're an enlightened, intelligent soul. You have got to really struggle to get where these morons exist, Jim. They think stem cells, okay? They believe stem cells are babies.
Well, you know, I just wasn't brought up in that type of unenlightened environment. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's obvious.
And it's hard for me to comprehend people like that because, in my opinion, they hurt people or they try to hurt people like me who have other beliefs than their own. And, you know, because as we've discussed before, I believe in a lot of things that you don't believe in, okay?
Yeah, and you're free to. That's fine.
And, you know, and I'm not knocking anything you're saying because it's a conversation, but, you know, there's got to be some type of compromise or some type of rational
Jim,
I wish there could be. I suffer from diabetes, I suffer from a lot of things, and I could benefit personally from it.
Yes, you could.
And I don't, but, you know, but I just don't understand.
Jim, there are diabetics in the Bush family.
Well, I know, I mean, but these people, I mean, I don't know. I just don't know where they're coming from. I don't know what the problem with them is. I mean, all I know is I have a certain amount of faith that's just like the faith of a little child and certain things you might not have, but that's okay. That's your thing. You know, as far as religion is concerned, in most cases, I buy into it, and there's some people who don't. You know, you either buy into it or you don't, right?
Sure.
But I
but that applies. That applies
to the world. They have to stick their beaks in something like this, which could help a lot of people.
Well, Jim, you raised a point a couple of minutes ago that I think we should address, because a lot of people are where you are. You said, I find it difficult to believe that these or understand or comprehend these people or think that they're really that way. I'm paraphrasing. And there is a lot of normal, mainstream, everyday America that is right where you are. They look at these religion industry thugs. I mean, anybody that would assault a pregnant woman on the way to a women's health clinic is nothing more or less than a thug. Okay, they do.
That's terrible.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the story in Jackson, Mississippi is all these laws, the goal is to shut down this one last women's health clinic. Hospitals can still provide abortions. Emergency rooms can provide abortions. Women can go to private physicians and obtain abortions. The only people that this is important to are poor people who can get it at a reasonable rate at that clinic in Jackson. This is a direct assault on the poor women of Mississippi. Not the wealthy women. They'll always get their abortions. And they probably...
Well, that is regrettable, and it's not acceptable to me personally. But, you know...
But what I'm getting at here is that you and many like you, Jim, look at these goons and say, surely something will be done about them. Well, something will be done. They're taking power now. If we don't actively oppose them, they will have power. They already have a great deal of it.
Well, I'll tell you, if in fact they are indeed possessed of some other agenda, and whatever it could be, I don't know. But if in fact they are hurting people, then I would not change places for them for all the tea in Mexico. And I can say this, you know, I believe in this too. I've never met an agnostic or an atheist in a hospital bed or a foxhole either. That's the way I feel about, you know, my own personal faith. And I'm sure you can understand that. I'm sure.
Sure. I don't take issue with your faith. I don't take issue with...
O'Brien was going on this morning about this, and if that idiot were to get something that stem cells to help, he'd be the first one in line trying to get the research done for it. He was going on about that this morning. And it just makes me kind of...
Well, do you... You know, they're very good. Rove and company, Jim...
greatly to hear people fakes like that, and, you know, people who just... I don't know what drives them.
What drives them?
That kind of mentality, and I'm not. And
Jim, what drives them?
Guilty of understanding it. I don't know why.
I'm trying to help here. What drives them is a mad, overarching, overweening lust for pure, unmitigated, blind power.
But Bob, how long can they keep that power?
They think they'll keep it forever because Jesus wants them to have it.
When your
computer gets healthy again, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to go to Google and do a little research. Just type in a couple of words for me, please. I want you to type in Christian Reconstructionists. And I want you to type in Christian Dominionists. And I want you to see where these people are trying to go. They're actual goal, they will tell you to your face, is to create a theocratic fascist state in this nation. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound so strident. I'm not trying to yell at you. We're friends.
Yeah, I believe, you know, I can understand what you're saying, and I'm not offended by what you say at all. I mean, I can understand that. And, you know, I've seen this happen before. I mean, this happened in our earlier colonies back in, Massachusetts.
Yeah, to the point that Massachusetts eventually passed a law that said no pastor could be a member of government.
Right. And, of course, a lot of people, about 19, were pressed to death or hanged because of superstitions about witchcraft, because these people were unmarried or...
This is those people again, Jim. This is those people again. And what I'm trying to get at is that that we've got to understand that they're not playing. These people have got to be actively opposed in the streets. These people, like World Can't Wait is doing, and now, down in Jackson, Mississippi right now, it's not about abortion. This is about control of the nation. And, you know, it starts with women. Men follow. It's about controlling the nation as a whole. the fact that they're not wearing brown shirts and down at heels boots doesn't make them any less the fascists that they are.
Well, your point is well taken, but you know, I hate to see it hurt, you know, people like me who have religious faith and who believe in Christ and who believe in his coming and things like that, because I do.
Yeah. Well, see, I have never met a militant Episcopal, and God knows I have never met a militant Unitarian. And these were the people that these monsters from Operation Save America, these were the people, these gentle spirits trying to lead Christ-like lives, these are the monsters that were attacked by Operation Save America. They took a bullhorn and screamed at the woman who is the pastor of the Universalist congregation in Jackson. They screamed at her that she was a pastor of Satan.
Well, you know, Bob, I wish I could lead a more Christ-like life. I really do. And I fail in so many ways, and I feel in so many ways wanting, in so many ways inadequate, if my life draws to an end. And I just feel like that one day I'm going to have to meet God and give an account of what I've done and this, that, and the other. However, being of that persuasion, I don't think it's one of the sins that I'm going to have to account for. Of being intolerant, of being hateful towards life and other people, and means by which life can be improved and is necessarily sustained. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does, Jim. Yeah, it does. We could, you know, this is a pretty nice little country to live in. When people are just normal enough to attend to their own business and leave others to their own.
I mean, I can't even tolerate the sight of a hungry animal or whatever. You can ask Agnes about Rupert.
Oh, I understand. We know.
And, you know, I think you know where I'm coming from there.
Yeah, I do.
And you're coming up on the break now, and I'm going to let you...
Jim, thank you very kindly.
I just don't understand that kind of intolerance or that kind of bigotry. And that kind of hate, because it's just not part of me. It's not part of my heart. I don't hate anybody.
I understand, but I think if you Google those terms, Christian Dominionist and Christian Reconstructionist, the scales will fall away from your eyes, and you will see the real danger. These people are far more dangerous to America than Osama could ever dream of being.
Than who? I'm sorry.
These people are far more dangerous to America than Osama could ever even want to be.
I think you're probably right. Now, I'll tell you, there's nothing worse than people who are misled purposely by some of these forces. And for what? I mean, how long can they live? How much power can they have? And what good can that power do them?
They have passed this drive for power, yea, verily, from generation unto generation. This isn't anything new, Jim.
I mean, what I don't understand is, how do they get off on that sort of thing? I mean, what psychological urge propels them?
Well, frankly, if I was to give you the flip answer, Jim, I would say that these people are horribly sickly repressed, and they need to either get loaded or get laid. You know, one of those would help.
Well, I don't have any problem with either one of those. You know.
Yeah.
Because I've done both, and I've been pretty, and you know, well, all I can say is we're all human, and you know, to err is human, to repent is divine, to persist is devilish.
True okay. enough, Jim. Thank you very much, and have yourself a good evening. All right.
Likewise, my friend.
All right, take care.
Take care. God
Bye.
Bless you.
You as well. I tell you what, I don't want to do a break. I want to keep this rolling. Our good friend Peter's waiting. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Good evening to you.
Good evening to you.
A couple of things I wanted to talk about. Your show has been great tonight, by the way. I've really enjoyed it. When you were talking to Jim a few minutes ago, you were talking about, I forget exactly how you phrased it, but basically you're alluding to freedom and liberation for women and, you know, keeping women under control and that sort of thing. You know, I've long said and heard this from the back when I was a baby crawling around doing my liberation crawl, what liberation and freedom for women is really liberation for everybody, because it seems to me the feminine in this society is what's totally looked down upon and repressed. You know, the only reason that they want to beat up on gay folk is because the men are interpreted to be feminine, which is a bad thing. Yet lesbians are tolerated, and yet women can wear pants, because these are all swings toward the male side, which is good.
Do you really? No, I don't. I'm not trying to make trouble, Peter. But you really think lesbians are tolerated?
Well,
we don't want them getting married neither. Now,
only in a triple X movie, perhaps. But you know, more so maybe in some ways. But only in the in a general sense.
Okay, I think I understand that.
Yeah. It goes on and on about, you know, the for instance, in the Muslim societies, you know, the women are supposed to cover their heads and wear, you know, clothes from head to toe because they don't tempt the men.
Because they're a vice.
So that the men take absolutely no responsibility for animal-like behavior or, you know, rape or it's always the woman's fault. It just goes, there's a subculture of repression of the feminine throughout all of the societies, but, you know, that's kind of a by the way. What really got me started on this is these damn fundamentalists. And, you know, they want to have it both ways. On one side of the coin, they are just as literal as the day is long about interpreting the Bible. Everything is a fact. The dinosaurs were put there to confuse the unbelievers and on and on and on, except when it comes to the creation of life. They want to say that because of science, you know, and that you can, you know, the fetus feels pain and, that life begins at conception. Yet that is absolutely not biblical. They refuse to take their own that literal attitude because it suits them. You know, it's convenient for them to look at science in one respect, but in every other respect they deny it. You know, throughout the Bible, I could quote you verse after verse after verse. Life is always referred to as the breath of life. You know, he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and
absolutely
on and on. I mean, there must be 100,000 verses. I won't even.
They refer
there.
To breathing. If it ain't breathing, it ain't alive.
When the infant takes his first breath is the biblical, and also it there's a verse that says, and that was when, you know, the man became a living soul, is when you take that first breath. So it just really confounds me, this totally literal attitude on one hand, and on the other hand, it's you know. It's,
well, I guess they're Catholic. You know, they like to poke fun, these fundamentalists, at what they call cafeteria Catholics. You know, I'll believe this part of the dogma, but I won't believe that part. Well, they're cafeteria literalists, Peter.
Well, now that's a very good point.
I'll take the Jell-O with the bananas in it, but I don't want the hominy.
And another thing, too, these people are totally trapped in that. Do you know that in churches, if someone has psychological problems or they need marriage counselors, et cetera, they are referred to Christian psychologists. And they will seek out Christian attorneys when there is some sort of legal dispute. And, you know, not that and it's different, though. It's not like, you know, keeping it in your local community or blacks supporting black businesses to keep the money in the community and to grow the community. It's not that at all. They're trapped into this mindset where all of this, you know, you were talking about it earlier. Joe Vecchio mentioned it, about you're only supposed to watch this news and you're not supposed to get your sources from anything but the church. They totally have themselves trapped so that all of the feedback reinforces these ridiculous beliefs.
Yeah, well, they're keeping it in the cult.
Yeah, it's cult based. It's cult based. It's not really a financial decision.
And they, you know, they take things like, I was thumbing around last night after the conversation with Pastor Dan. You know, I had a wonderful time. I love conversations.
I got to hear that. I was so sorry I missed part of that.
Well, it's okay. I mean, that's what the archives are for.
Yeah.
But I went thumbing around through 1st and 2nd Peter and 1st, 2nd and 3rd John. It's not a long read. But there are. You know, there's all kinds of advice about how the community, you know, those are certainly not the words of Jesus, which I think is what really counts. If you're going to, you know, be a follower of Christ, you need to follow what Christ said. But, you know, these things are written and they talk about how you behave within the community. And this is these literalists and these fundies take it and think that they're supposed to somehow be exclusive unto themselves.
Oh, yeah, everything that Jesus was not, exactly true. Yeah, I totally closed in upon itself. You know, there another reference in that's biblical and happens over again is about the Spirit or love. And the reference in the Bible is always toward moving water, like the springs of living water and the well, you know, the springs of life and this sort of thing. It always has to do with moving water, not stagnant water.
No.
But that happens when you have a closed community and the water's just sitting there in some sort of, you know.
Next thing you know, nasty stuff's growing in it.
Well, exactly. Yeah, and, in order to live in the world, you have to flow into the world. You have to be a part of it.
And water that moves bears life, and water that stands still and does nothing breeds death.
Well, that's the biblical frame of reference on it, too. It's not a closed-in thing. Bob, they're just so damn wrong. How did they get this wrong? What happened to these people?
Jerry Falwell happened to them.
That's true.
Oral Roberts happened to them. Mass media communication happened to them, Peter. Because mass media, you know, the religion industry saw mass media, and they didn't say, you know, all saving souls, you know, my Aunt Edna. Saving money. You know, TV came along, and Oral Roberts didn't have to take that stupid tent all over the place anymore. He could heal in the studio.
Yeah. You know, the other night someone, Tammy Faye and Jim, or actually Jim Baker, I think it was Ben Birch brought up Jim Baker and his new wife. I've met Jim Baker and his new wife.
Ew.
I absolutely have. When I was trapped in that year-long fundamentalist, you know, recovery center in Pensacola.
Oh, sweet Jesus, no.
We got taken off of these weird little field trips all out into the boonies. Well, Jim Baker and his new wife had set up sort of a little enclave out in the middle of nowhere down, like, close to swamps and stuff.
Well, right down there with the gators, that's kind of where they belong.
And it was some kind of, they had some sort of a camp there for, like, mothers without husbands or women that were abused or some people, you know, people who need this place to stay. And they had, like, this, Jim was talking about it, this huge television studio truck. It's the kind that you would take out for remote broadcast, like to sports events, what have you. And he said it was several, millions and millions of dollars. It was like a tractor trailer thing with the whole
And the satellite uplink and the works.
It was the deal. It was the real deal. That was there, and they were about to start broadcasting from there. But later on, it didn't work out at that location. They moved the whole facility moved away. But he is such a quiet little mousy man. I mean, just a mysterious little mincy kind of guy.
You're getting there. You're getting there, Peter.
I'm just not going to go there. But his wife was actually.
Let's put it this way: he didn't need the soap on the rope when he went to prison.
His wife is very attractive.
Whoops! I dropped it. You know, I mean.
Yeah. Agnes, do you see how desperately I'm trying to?
No, that's why I'm doing it for you, Peter.
Thank you, dear. Anyway, it was a hoot. Yeah, I've met Jim Baker and his new wife and shook his hand, and I thought, my, Peter, you have seen it all now.
But, oh, Lord. But, no, seriously, how this happened and where it goes, and, you know, my admonition wasn't just to Jim. Everybody needs to go out and read about Christian Reconstructionism and Christian Dominionism, because these are the two most dangerous movements, I think, to the entire world.
Well,
even after the oil is gone, these people will have the ability to gain power, go around, and kill people.
Well, I just got a new book in the mail today. It was a Buzzflash special. I believe it was Buzzflash. And what's his name? Hartman, thought a lot of the book. And anyway, it's called Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism. And I'm looking forward to reading it. I think it's a well-done book without being too dry. I'll see if I can do a book report on it later.
Oh, do please, because I've just started in on John Dean's new book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Conservatives Without Conscience.
Ah, yes, I've seen that mentioned.
And he goes straight to the heart of this Christian fundamentalism.
Does he really?
Yes, he absolutely does. And you know, he points to them to what they are. And see, the thing is, they use verses, these people, Dean identifies them for the authoritarians that they basically are. And in so doing, that's part of the reason I was wandering around in the 1st and 2nd Peter and 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. There are, Agnes.
Oh, is she sacrificing bunnies again?
She's over here. She's smirking madly. I had to. But no, the thing is, there are lines in there about, you know, it is demonic to resist authority.
Oh, yes. When I was in that fundamentalist recovery thing in Pensacola, that there was this huge emphasis on God gives us government, and all government is of God and from God and to be obeyed, blah, 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 blah. It's just amazing. That probably worked back in the Old Testament, you know, before George Bush and Fox News came along.
Before electricity?
Yeah, of God.
You know, the reason, you mentioned the breath of life. The reason they refer to the breath of life is because this was a people, you know, never mind no microscope, these people didn't know why it rained.
Well, this is true. This is even...
Oh, I had the weirdest little wander around last night. I wound up reading about Balaam.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because there's... another story for another day. But let me ask you a question, Peter. Now, we talk about, you know, how can these people be so wrong? And I don't aim this directly at you. I don't aim this directly at anyone. And I include myself in the query. It is very easy for us to sit here and say, these people are so wrong. How can they be so misguided? How can they be so wicked? How can they be so turned on a path of destruction that runs contrary to everything that... but you get my point.
Yes, I do.
Is it possible to say that directly to them? And what do you expect the result would be?
Lord have mercy. No doubt some sort of a discussion about how they love their children and they're faithful to their church and how they pray but nonetheless I see that their hearts are cold and that they've shut their ears to the Holy Spirit is what I see there.
Yeah, Pharaoh has hardened their hearts.
I remember when Bush was elected, I remember overhearing someone in the church gloating over it, going, well, at least he prays. You know, just it seems to be very surface, doesn't it? A lot of it seems... But those of us who have ears to hear and eyes that see could see George Bush for the evil jackass that he was before he was ever elected.
Yes.
I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when the courts declared him the president, not the people, the courts. I remember I dropped my head and I said to myself out loud, God help us. That was my reaction because I could see who the man was then. These people have no freaking discernment. None.
Yeah, that's one of those prophetic gifts they kind of got left out on. They got the tongues and they got the interpretation. They didn't get that spirit of discernment.
Yeah, and they're dumb as rocks.
And okay, so there's the next question. If you can't engage them, can you just look at them? Would it help if I'm looking for solutions here, Peter? Would it help if we just all learn to look them in the eye and laugh at them and say, "My God, you're hilarious." And treat them like and treat them like a comedy act. I mean, I'm trying, there's got to be some way, because unlike Pastor Dan, I don't know if you can reach out to these people. I don't know.
Well, because it's...
But they've got to be marginalized and minimalized somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's such a closed society, you almost can't. You almost can't. You know, the only way that the church will change is for voices that are speaking the truth and are connected in some way to the good of the universe to begin speaking those things aloud from the pulpit.
And some are. I had that article today about the minister from Riverside Church, 70-year-old gentleman, tries to be meek and mild in the pulpit, but gets worked up anyway, and he was talking about literalism, and he says, and do you believe that the old devil showed up to Jesus, standing, and he's standing there in the red long underwear with the pointy tails, you couldn't miss him? And went on to say, this is about an internal struggle. And the reason it's there is it's about the same internal struggle that we all endure.
Well, yes, I can see that in the global sense. In the big picture, it is an internal struggle between good and evil for all of us. And it's the eternal battle that's been going on since, as far as there's been any history, either spoken or written.
Right, and since it's an internal struggle, you know, where you're dealing with George Bush, he just, okay, I'm a coward, you win. Old devil, come on in. And that's possession.
You know, I can't imagine that level of sellout, that level of surrender. I just can't imagine. Here again, though, I've never been offered that kind of money, and I certainly hope to God I don't have a price. I tell myself I don't. But, I mean, maybe in a way you have to forgive him, but nah.
No.
I don't.
Not this time. Don't think so.
Nah. No, I want him prosecuted for war crimes, and after he's jailed, I want him put it in the lion cage or a circus trailer and paraded around the country on displays so that people can yell and scream at him.
With a whole display. You know, pictures of him giving neck rubs to the Chancellor of Germany and you know, chewing with his mouth open and pictures of dead Iraqi babies.
Yeah. So then I want him taken on a world tour. You know, the man really needs a wake-up call. And I mean that in the kindest, gentlest way.
Of course you do. And the most peaceful and legal way.
Yes, the most peaceful and legal wake-up call.
Yeah, Agent Fred. You know, I want him tried. I want him to have a fair trial. I want all the rules of evidence and procedure observed. And then I want them to do with George Bush what they did, who was it, Albert Speer? I want him to have a whole prison all to himself and be the only inmate. That would fit.
Yeah, either that or public display. I don't know which one would make me happier, but someone has to answer for this. This kind of evil hasn't rocked the planet since the Crusades or the Nazis it's just amazing to me.
It is, and it's frightening as can be. Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you. I enjoyed
these calls
the call.
Are just wonderful, and
hug
I appreciate
to you
it.
All.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And onward, a few minutes left, our good friend Gerard calling from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Bob, I know we're sliding down to the end of the program here, but I just want to make a couple of comments. And
go right ahead.
Tied in with what you've been talking about, I was recalling a conversation kind of earlier that you were talking about talking to people from the South. The other day, I'm kind of behind the times, and I got to see the movie Walk the Line.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the conversation you had a few weeks ago now about Sam Phillips and Sun Records and
right.
That kind of started the cultural thing going. And I was impressed by it. And kind of in the theme that you were talking about with Peter, I think, and when I think about a personage like Johnny Cash, I think maybe the difference between Johnny Cash and James Dobson is that Johnny Cash went to a place through his addiction, perhaps. Some people might call it a dark night of the soul, a place where you go where you could probably not even spell God, let alone have an experience with God, and survived it. He came out.
Yeah.
Had what I would call a spiritual experience rather than a religious experience.
A transformative experience.
Yeah. And the thing I always like, and Johnny Cash has been a part of my life since I was a little kid. My dad was a teacher, and in the summertime when school was off, he was a semi-truck driver. And back then, because they didn't have the kind of insurance rules, now he would allow me to ride with him once in a while. And there was nothing better than riding through the prairies out west listening to Johnny Cash late at night. But anyway, the thing about Johnny Cash is that he always impressed people with having an authenticity about him, which I find with a lot of people from the South that I've met. And it's just that thing, you know, it's hard to, when somebody goes through that kind of a dark night of the soul thing, it's hard to put, there's no such thing as naivete in their character. And I think with a lot of the fundamentalists, I think they just have this thing, Peter was talking about, you know, how they kind of just stay in their own little Christian circle.
And they pretend they've been through that night, and they've never lived in anything but sunlight and never known anything but easy going.
Yeah, it, you know, and it kind of impressed me in the movie, and I haven't researched this at all, but kind of the chronology of when he basically kicks the drugs, the next thing he does is go play at Folsom Prison.
Yeah.
You know, and he went to right to the people, the downtrodden, you know, he always said he wore black for all the downtrodden people, and those are the people he went to. The people who had that same kind of experience that he brushed up or he went through, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I just think that, you know, I guess not use him as a model, but I think when we talk to people, try to talk to them authentically, and you're right, I agree, sometimes it's just hysterical what the fundamental people come up with. I just can't believe it, but there's all of this thing, you know. If you have a strong strain of naivete in your character, you know, people are going to be able to tell you anything, and you're going to swallow it, you know. But I don't know, Johnny Cash just impressed me as someone.
Well,
like,
you know,
if he walked into a room, you know, and somebody tried to lay some of that fundamentalist bullshit on him, you know, I think he'd look him square in the eye and say, "Hey." Man,
they walked in some fundy circles, but the thing is, he's the kind of person that wasn't afraid to be alone in his own skin.
Right.
And most of your fundies are terrified of their world, they're terrified of their circumstances, and they are unable to stand on their own. They're like, I don't know, they got no legs under them.
Yeah.
And that as a consequence, they must be led, they must be told what to do. These poor fools. I mean, Operation Save America, these are fools within the dictionary definition of the word.
Well, they got some kind of dogma, the tail end of some dogma, and they're holding on to it for all they're worth. You know?
Because if that was to fall away from them, they would find themselves bereft and in a world that was without reason.
Yep.
They've got to have, their world has to be black and white, and they can't tolerate any gray.
Exactly.
Gerard, have a wonderful evening. Good hearing from you.
You too, guys.
All right, take care. Bye now. And just so we can end on a newsy little note, you might hear about this later. Did you catch this? Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said today that George Bush personally blocked Justice Department lawyers from their internal probe of the domestic spying program. This is another one of those moments when they look up and go, "Yeah, we did it. What are you going to do about it?" The Attorney General confirmed that George Bush himself interfered in a Justice Department investigation of unconstitutional activity. God, if there'd only been a blue dress involved. I'm astonished by a story like that. They would have stormed. They would have stormed the White House and torn Bill Clinton into shreds if he had tried something like that. The Republican right would have, because they're vicious. But maybe, I don't know, maybe Arlen Specter can craft a new law for George Bush that'll help him with all of that, that little constitutionality problem. That's it. That's enough. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my darling wife Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. Associate produced by Zach, the production intern. Ben Birch maintains the streams and the archives of all the programs at the Head On Radio Network, as well as the archives of many other fine liberal programs. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. John Fox is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. The News Ninja maintains our individual show postings at headonradionetwork.com. The list is growing longer, isn't it? You see, we're growing. But some things don't change. And one of the things that doesn't change is that this show and every show on the Head On Radio Network happens because thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights get up every day and they go and they build the American dream. And by supporting this network, they're saving the American dream too. And RMR, always, 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 it's all for you.